Senate come to order. Messages from the House. Where's our reader? Okay.
February the 17th, 2014, from the House of Representatives. Message number 109, third reading, passed amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 34, Solid Waste Cease and Transfer Eligibility. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 5, Education Required School Bus Video Equipment, 2. Ayes 32, noes 27, excused 1. House Bill 51, Fireman Pension Plan Benefits. Ayes 52, noes 6, excused 1. Conflict, 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 17th, 2004, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 41, Emergency Medical Technician Pension Plan. Ayes 52, noes 2. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. And House Bill number 46, Public Employees Pension Plan Contribution. Ayes 48, noes 11, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Is this standing? Reports from standing committees.
February the 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 89, Health Professionals Medicaid Billing. Respectfully reports back to the with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting. No, Senators Peterson and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 53, Unfair Trade Practices, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 31-24-7, Sobriety Programs, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 34, Involuntary Hospitalization Emergency Hearings, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 82, 2014 Large Project Funding, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothsus, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 83, Oil and Gas Operations Bonding Requirement, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, 02, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss. No, Senator Coe. Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Senate File 89, Health Professionals Medicaid Billing, sponsored by Senator Landon and others, it was just read in. It does not have an appropriation in it, but it may need one. There is a significant transfer of funding from Family Services to Health Department's Medicaid budget, and there may well be an expansion of the Medicaid budget in total if this bill passes, although that was not clear from the testimony committee. It was clear there's a big transfer of funds. So, Mr. President, even though there's no appropriation in it, I think it's better part of wisdom, and I ask that it be re-referred to committee number 2.
Senate File 89 will be re-referred to committee number 2 without objection. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business consideration of bills of general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we resolve ourselves back into committee of the whole to consider only Senate File 1, the budget.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's adopted. Senator Christensen.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're on, and I move Section 2, Agency 2, Secretary of State. Mr. Chairman, what we did in this budget is in terms of the GAC, we denied the governor's rec, $150,000 general fund for potential litigation expenses, denied governor's rec, $175,000 general fund for potential legislative mandates. They had two positions they asked for in their voter register maintenance in their business corporations, and we offered them one, and that's why we had a reduction of $104,481 in the general fund. We reduced the governor's rec by $5,000 for the transition expenses, leaving them $10,000. And then on the HAVA, which is the Help America Vote Act, we cut their budget in half. They asked for $1,470,000, and we cut it to $735,000. And Mr. Chairman, very quickly on that, that came about as a result of the election in 2002, and the feds have been paying for that until about 2010, 100%. And the Secretary of State's been able to do what they wanted. It's called the Wyoming Register, and they've been able to do it without any money at all. They came to us this full appropriation. It's on some maintenance we thought they could do for half. And if they cannot, they'll come back to us supplementary. The other thing we did, Mr. Chairman, is we, in terms of the statewide rules database and updating them, we got $692,000 in SIPA. And then we had a carryover appropriation of $125,000 to take care of streamlining government rules. I call for the question.
Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's, Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 2, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Section 2 having been adopted, the next section for our consideration is Section 3.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 3, State Auditor. What we did in that particular budget, same as the other two elected officials, we added, in this case, $10,000 general fund for transition. We thought it should be consistent for all of them. We adopted the governor's letter to add $182,000 to the brucellosis testing and containment. And there is $500,000. You see that in footnote number 3 that's unexpected. They have spent about $190,000 of that, so the $182,000 took it back up to the $500,000. And then we added a footnote for carryover on the $15.6 million. If you recall, last time on our group health insurance, We had a good deal going, and we had roughly $17.1 million that we did not need to provide health insurance. So we rolled the 15.6 into this next budget, and we saved 1.5, and we reverted that to the general fund. We denied the governor's requesting $300,000 for a public library endowment challenge loan program funding. When we heard the testimony on it, they just really weren't using the money they had, so we didn't figure there was any sense in putting more money into there. And then we removed $4.5 million in Section 305 employee benefits. This is an ongoing program. It's where we subsidize the retired health insurance, and it's in the standard budget, and we just put it into a different subsection. I ask for the question.
Further discussion. Senator Driscoll.
Quick clarification. What's Bruce Losis doing in the auditor's budget?
The question was referenced, why was Bruce Losis in this budget? Senator Geis.
Been in there since about 2003. So if we do have an emergency outbreak in brucellosis, it's in the auditor's budget, and the state vet can tap into that right away and take care of that. Don't
call for the question.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, this is not a change the committee made, but I was curious as to why the auditor's administrative expenses are $17,233,000 when you look at the, for instance, the next page, the state treasurer is under $4 million, and they have one more employee. And if that's what it really costs, I'd like to apply for a job at the state auditor's office.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to be sure I was right. It's a health insurance component, and it flows through the state auditor. It's a large amount of money, so it's a flow-through.
It's the health insurance for all the state employees?
Just one second. Mr. Chairman,
please.
It is, and that $17.3 million is the amount of money I just discussed, that when we paid the health insurance last year, we had extra money, so it's a one-time bubble that goes through because of the extra money we had. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 3, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 3 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 4. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 4, State Treasurer. And the only thing we did to the State Treasurer, Mr. Chairman, is we agreed again, once again, we put in $10,000 general fund for transition expenses. We also did a change in terms of the funding. We're going through budgets, and if you look at footnote number 2, the 249 AG terminology we're not using anymore. It's actually special revenue, so we're just getting consistent with that. The state treasurer asked for two positions, and we granted them one, and that's in their unclaimed property division. That is a growing program, however, we felt, based on the number of claims that we saw relative to the load, that they could get by with one. That's where we left it. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor? Aye. Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 4, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 4 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 5.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 5, Superintendent of Public Instruction, yield to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a relatively simple budget at this point in time, but I expect it to get more complicated as the days and weeks.
Pull your mic up so we can.
You know, this thing is frustrating, Mr. Chairman. Anyway, okay, so this is the Superintendent of Public Instruction. It's a relatively simple budget at this point in time. It calls for $2,239,994 and 8 full-time employees. There's also a footnote, which is similar to the rest of the footnotes that you've seen. If there's a change in the state superintendent of public instruction as a result of the election, there's appropriated $10,000 for that expenses associated with that. Stand for any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Any further questions? All those in favor of Senator Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt section number 5, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section number 5 having been adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. I apologize for not catching. I'd like to ask the Chairman to take us back to the State Treasurer's and talk about the decision to reject the second senior accountant. So I assume, and I don't know if that's an investment officer, but both with the retirement system and with the treasurer's office, there's always the question of how much we paid for these senior investment officers. Do we have enough people that are training behind so that we can manage the billions of dollars that we invest? And if you just take us through that decision a little bit.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Vice President,
Chairman,
four.
This has nothing to do with the investment officers. This is unclaimed property.
Okay.
They requested two positions. We granted them one.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Having Section 5 having been adopted, the next section for our consideration is Section 6.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 6, Administrative and Information. Members of the Senate, we did several things in this budget. It's a large budget, and the reason it's so large, of course, is because the employee group insurance flows through this. And, Mr. Chairman, what we did is we took $500,000 out of their general fund for statewide property leasing. It's a large budget. The feeling of the committee was they could sure handle a $500,000 reduction. And, of course, if the capital moves forward, we're going to hopefully pick up 25% more space in Cheyenne. Mr. Chairman, we have a $25,000 general fund to eject market policy position and pay tables. This is an adjustment factor. Mr. Chairman, what we did in the group insurance plan, we gave an option to the school districts to join. And when that was put in place, we thought there'd be a big rush to do that. So we added positions to pay for that. They were never funded. And they would have been funded by the school foundation program. There's five vacant positions sitting there, so we removed them. Then we adopted the governor's letter number 12, which is a $100,000 general fund for e-books, e-auto, and e-signs. This is in the state library. And we denied the governor's number 12 request of a $100,000 general fund for additional newspaper digitization. As I understand this is going back. We have a lot of digitization for papers now that goes back in time. They wanted to go further back. We didn't think that was a way to spend our money. I call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt section number 6 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 6 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is section 7. Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, I move section 7, Wyoming Military Department, and yield to Senator from Sweetwater County.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 7, Wyoming Military Department. First thing that JAC did was we added the 11 federal positions, added the footnote specifying that on the conditions that the federal money remains. The number two, JAC reduced the 32,571 and increased the 32,571 in federal funds to match the federal grant awards. Number three, JAC added footnote number two, specifying retiree insurance funding shall be made from the agency general funds. Mr. Chairman, the 11 positions we added has the caveat that from the federal set, the state pick up the retirement, and instead of adding money, we just basically told the military, find the money in your budget. It's around $5,000, as I recall. Added footnote number three, that appropriations from the youth challenge, and by the way, that number two, it was also a youth challenge, but then here we stated that the appropriations for the youth challenge programs, notwithstanding, it says 19,970,702 for every 40 cents, federal funds appropriated to the National Guard youth challenge program, the department may expend state funds appropriated for this program, an amount not to exceed 60 cents, or other minimum amount is necessary to qualify for appropriations of federal funds, which is, I believe, has been in there before. Added footnote four, JAC added that firefighters that can't currently be called upon to assist with firefighting within Wyoming, which we've had before. Added $54,000 general fund for the burial teams. The testimony we heard was that they were kind of lacking funds for cleaning uniforms and stipends and whatnot. $150,000 to the governor's rec for contract veteran service officers. It's a one-time appropriation and that was added for footnote number five. Stand for questions.
Questions. Senator Schiffer.
Yeah, I've got a question on the footnote number five. And what you just presented, you said it's a one-time, and for each of the guests of honor at those ceremonies, it is one-time. But to keep those ceremonies going, it's not one-time. Veterans are dying all the time. And I don't understand why that's a one-time funding when the funerals go on and on and on, other than for the one that happens to be buried.
Thank you. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I understand the question, he's talking about footnote 7, and this is for the service officers that go around the state and are talking to the various veterans. And there was a lot of discussion. We added veterans. We added people last time. It was up to three, down to one. I think we settled on two. They wanted some more, so we did one more with a one-time appropriation. It really has nothing to do with the burial teams.
Senator Schiffer.
Well, then I'll ask relatively the same question. Why do you think that the demand for service officers is going to go down? They're cutting the size of the military and all those things. There's going to be more veterans out there, not fewer. And if we're going to provide services for them, and the numbers are going up, why are we cutting service officers? I don't understand that. I'm glad that we're going to go ahead and bury them. I think that you guys are doing much better than normal on that part. But
Senator,
I think we ought to provide service officers.
Senator Hastert.
As I recall, it was in their request, and the governor also put that in there and approved that. And all we were saying is I think there was a concern at JEC. There was a lot of discussion about whether we actually needed that, at what level, and what we basically said was do it for 1 year, come back and tell us what your needs are, and we'll adjust from there.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, help me out because this is on – you know, on the regular budget, not the adjustment. But if we're spending $54,000 for burial teams, then what exactly are we spending $576,000 on for the Oregon Trail Cemetery? That sounds like an awful lot of money to mow lawns.
Senator, Vice President Bebout.
Go ahead.
Senator Hastert, just back to you.
I'm to the...
Excuse me, Senator Johnson. Apologize. Didn't... Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In a booklet for on the military, the Oregon Trail State Veterans Cemetery in Evansville by Casper there has administration, maintenance buildings, and a chapel, and encompasses an area of 120 acres in size. Eligible veterans and their eligible family members may be buried at this cemetery without cost. There is an average of 6 burials per week with over 1,000 individuals presently interned. The unit provides for the operation and maintenance of the cemetery with the exception of the cost of burial vaults, which are reimbursed by the United States government.
Senator Barnard.
Chairman, I had a question about the Youth Challenge Program. From this, I can't tell whether the appropriations were...
It's on.
I can't tell if the appropriations were increased, stayed the same, or decreased for that program, for the Youth Challenge Program.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out that those military burials are not just at the National Cemetery, they're at any cemetery that are being conducted by the honor teams. So if it was in the National Cemetery's budget, it has nothing to do with the honor teams.
Thank you. Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As to the youth program, it's you'll find it in the budget under the Army National Guard, and it's around $7.3 million, and that was a standard budget. It wasn't increased or decreased, and that's a combination of both state and federal funds.
Any further discussion on Section 7?
Question.
All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 7, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 7 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section... The next section is Senator Cole.
Chairman, I'd like to take privilege of the floor, please.
Go ahead.
Our new president has returned. I'd like to introduce Stephanie Hykstra out there, accompanied by Mark Kitchen. She's the new president of Northwest College in Powell, right there.
Welcome to the Senate. Our next section for... be considered is Section 8. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Section 8, Office of the Public Defender. Yield to my colleague from Natrona County.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Office of Public Defender, what we did there, pretty much it was a standard budget. The only differences that we did are that we added the $25,000 for some furniture, apparently. I think there's like 15 offices around the state. Yeah, they maintain 15 field offices, 14 trial offices, and one appellate office. From time to time, furniture breaks and has to be replaced. There's $25,000 for furniture. Also, you saw the reduction. There's some ETS transfers that went out, so there was a reduction there. But that's the ETS people that are now supporting the tech services in the public defender's office. And the only other thing we did is we adopted the governor's rec to make $375,000 available immediately, and that's in capital case funding. And the reason we did that effective immediately is the capital case. Those are the funds that are used when you're defending a capital murder case. And the death penalty is on the line. When you have those cases that the United States Supreme Court requires a heightened level of preparation and resources to be for that, and that currently is $63,000 in the hole, and so it's effective immediately. So to get us through the biennium and then fund the subsequent biennium. And also, I just remind folks that when you see the special revenue on this one, that there's a certain percentage, approximately about 15% overall, but of the operating revenue for this comes from the 23 counties. With the other rest of it being provided by the state.
Thank you. Senator Cooper.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, maybe a little clarification on this, but I was thinking that the counties provide the office space for these public defenders, but I was thinking that they did the furniture too, but I'm going to know, was there any thing that maybe the good senator from the Casper area, maybe I could ask him whether the question was brought up, whether or not the counties provide the furniture too, because I was thinking Our county did that.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. You know, some counties provide that space, some don't. A lot of counties, a number of counties don't do that because they don't, the defendants that come in and are the customers of the public defender don't want to have to go to the same place where the police and the prosecutor are to for the interview. So a lot of those aren't. Some may do it as an accommodation, and it may, and I think those may be some contributions in kind, but ultimately they're responsible for their own offices and their own furniture and their own personnel.
Thank you. Mr. Vice President.
If there are no questions, I call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 8, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 8 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 9.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 9, Wyoming Pipeline Authority, member of the Senate, standard budget, with the one-time 6.2% reduction. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of the Vice President's motion to adopt Section 9, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 9 having been adopted, next section for our consideration is Section 10.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 10, Department of Ag, and yield to my colleague from Goshen County. Where is he?
What, me?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I've got it right in front of me here. The Ag Department, Mr. Chairman, the grand total on that Hummer is $39,489,286. We've got a few footnotes that we put in here. JAC added a footnote directing the department to pursue accreditation of its analytical service laboratory. We also added $250,000 of general funds for the purposes of wild horse data collection. What's going on there, Mr. Chairman, is that we had an agreement with the federal government. That agreement has lapsed. We want to get the data to so we can possibly enter back into another memorandum understanding. Some of the other states haven't been able to do that, and these wild horses are just getting overrunning some of the other states where there's wild horses. So we're hoping to get on top of that. Footnote number three is we modify the governor's rec the $2 million for one-time predator management grants and added a footnote specifying that it would be included in the agency standard budget. And these predator management things, some of it is for depredation of livestock, and this is where the wolves or the grizzly bears start chomping down on those critters up there, and so we're paying for a little bit of depredation. The other part of the dollars are for the local predator management programs. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure the good senator from Johnson County has been working on this budget, and he's probably got a couple of questions. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd call for the question or receive any questions on the budget.
Question having been called on... Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, if my colleague invites me, I can always come up with a question. It's whether he can answer it or not that it always is a mystery. My question is on this wild horse business. Those are federal programs. What's the end game on this thing? Now, this is how we get started in managing all sorts of weird things like grizzly bears and stuff. Is we start saying, well, we want input and we want to do this and we want to do that. That's a federal program. What's the end game? Where are we going with getting involved with wild horse management? Because I'm afraid it's going to cost us money before we get done.
Senator Hicks.
Chairman, I afraid somebody was going to ask that question because now you get to listen to me go into a long, protracted history. Back in 2000 or thereabouts, what we saw was the federal government wasn't complying with the Wild Horse and Burro Act, and horse populations had exploded. At that point in time, in 2003, the state of Wyoming filed a notice of intent to sue the Bureau of Land Management over mismanagement of those horses. What that ended up into, rather than a court case, was a federal consent decree where the BLM had agreed that they were out of compliance. And then over the next convening 10 years, they signed a decree saying that they would keep those wild horses at the appropriate management level.
That agreement expired in 2013. Right now, Interior has indicated to the state of Wyoming that they have absolutely no interest in complying with the Wild Horse and Burro Act and keeping those populations in check. There's insufficient funds, and they won't use the tools that are available to them to address those issues. So what these funds are basically available for is to go out and start to collect the data in consultation with the Attorney General's office, with the University of Wyoming, and what scientific information would be collected to be in appropriate capacity to address this issue of, are we in compliance, what constitutes thriving natural ecological balance in the Wild Horse and Burro Act. So the end game is here is to collect as much data as possible to put the state of Wyoming in the very best position that if we go back to the court system, that we have the information that we have to prevail, make the Bureau of Land Management manage the horses according to the Wild Horse and Burro Act. Hope that answers Senator's question.
Mr. Vice President.
Question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 10, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 10 having been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 11.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 11, Department of Revenue, due to my colleague from Sweetwater County. Mr. Chairman, with the Department of Revenue, what we did is we went with our standard budget, the same number of employees, and we did and put some money in there for some money in the CAMA computer program. You don't see that, but it's an expanded budget. And then we also put some additional funding in for the Liquor Commission, where they have additional employees that they've been using manpower for, and we appropriated the money so they can do that. The inability of them to be able to handle a lot of the liquor that, for whatever reason, has been going up in demand in our state. And I call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 11, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 11 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 12.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section, actually it's 14.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I move 14. Section 14, Miners Hospital Board, you and my colleague from Sweetwater County.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. State Miners Board, Section 14. Their budget remains the same. Really haven't done anything with them, as you know, Mr. Chairman, that members of the Senate, we have that bill going through to pass the Senate to modify a few of the rules there in the Miners Hospital. But other than that, they're utilizing the funds off their land grant, and we didn't make any changes.
Question.
Question having been called. All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 14, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 14 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 15.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 15, Attorney General. Yield to my colleague from Natrona County.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we've done in Section 15, Attorney General, is we essentially took almost all the governor's recs. The only difference is that if you look in the, and see in the middle there, the JAC denied the governor's rec of $1,205,400 for TFOs, which are task force officers that reimburse the counties. The other thing we did is that the JAC did adopt the governor's recommendation and a letter recommendation for $200,000 of general fund money to provide for the child advocacy centers. And what those are, if you don't know what those are, we can talk about that, but those are basically programs where children typically of abuse, whether it be sexual or physical abuse, are taken down. They're interviewed, they start to get therapy, but ultimately the interviews are taped and other things like that, and it helps with the prosecution as well as the therapy and stuff for those kids. So with respect to the task force officers, those were originally with ARRA grants. They were there, and the JAC in its long tradition of not funding programs that were initially funded with federal funds when the federal funds go away, and that's what those do. And so that eliminates, I believe, 6 drug task force officers and 1 officer for internet crimes against children. There are still drug task officers out there and still officers working Internet Crimes Against Children. It's just that these additional ones were not funded. Stand for questions. If there are no questions, we'd call for the question.
Senator Cooper.
Chairman, this is one of the areas that I've gotten a considerable amount of input from my law enforcement folks in my district. And I understand, after talking with the chair of appropriations, that, you know, a lot of these funds came from the ARRA money that we received some long ago. But I guess my question is there still a drug task force out there, but there's just less of them? Is that what we're doing here? We're just not reappropriating money to take care of the ARRA-funded ones, or is there no more? Does it no longer exist?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, according to the information we have, DCI employs 27 case investigative agents and 27 TFOs, which includes six ARRA TFO positions. 31 TFO positions were previously assigned to 5 drug teams. However, it's only 4 of those are over. So long story short, what you are is you're gone from 27 back to 21.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Vice President Bebout's to adopt Section 15, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Section 15 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 20.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 20, Department of Environmental Quality. Members of the Senate, we pretty much had a standard budget. The things we did is we added $75,000 to prove the efficiency of the permit computer program. And request of the majority floor here, it's a good idea. We need to get ways to get better systems on their computer in terms of the permitting process. We added the carryover appropriations on line item number 2, $750,000. This might be something we discuss later. It's been there for several years. They don't seem to want to spend the money, and we may have some serious discussions about if they're not going to spend it. We may take it away. We reduced the general fund by $55,000 roughly because of an accounting glitch. And then, Mr. Chairman, we talked about earlier when we had some discussion about the cease and transfer loan and grant program, and what the governor had said initially was $15 million of the dollars would go into the remediation account. He came back with a subsequent letter, letter number 6, and asked that money be put into the municipal solid waste cease and transfer loan and grant program. And that was a bill we talked about earlier. Call for the question.
Question having been called. All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 20, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 20 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 21.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 21, Department of Audit. My colleague from Sweetwater County.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Department of Audit, here again, we kept the base budget, the governor's recs, right on through. The only modification we made is added a footnote 1, just saying that $900,000 are appropriated from the collection agency board account. So we just moved that money. It was the only change we made. Otherwise, we went with the Gov's Rex.
Question?
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 21, say aye. Opposed, no. Section 21 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 23.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 23, Public Service Commission. Mr. Chairman, standard budget, no changes other than one request for spending of the universal service fund they receive of $250,000 to have that authority and use it in their current mechanism of how they spend that money that comes through from the universal service fund. So I would call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 23, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 23 having been has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 24.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 24, State Parks and Cultural Resources. Colleague from Lincoln County.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pulled $50,000 from the governor's recommend of $250,000. This was money for the humanities program. The We the People program, an educational program for the youth, one for the kids, $100,000 from a governor's letter. It's one-time funding. And then one-time funding of $300,000 Came in a footnote for the Arts Council Grants Program, and another footnote authorized the auditor to put $400,000 into the Cultural Trust account, Fund 605. This is one-time funding. Call for the question.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just some general questions in regard to the financial health of this division. You know, we've heard from the good chairman of the TRW his attempts to do things with ATMs and other things just short of bake sales in order to raise money. I guess I'd just like to have a little background in regard to your feelings about the testimony in regard for this department to function effectively on this budget. Just recently had hearings in my hometown in regard to try to open Fort Fetterman, and you know, they're always pleading poverty. So what was the conversation during testimony?
Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, we'll go back to just the overall approach. There was no discussion in our committee regarding ATMs and so forth, but yes, it's an ongoing problem. Having served on that committee that was mentioned, that's an ongoing problem to fund these state parks, and they're looking for creative solutions, license plates, various fees, programs like that. Thus, you see probably the situation where we've got one-time funding to keep everything moving forward. It's not completely solved, if that's an answer to your question, Senator.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 24, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 24 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 27.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 27, School Facilities Department. You, my colleague from Goshen County.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is the department. This has to do with operations, major maintenance, and engineering and technical. The total budget for that is $120,952,733. There's a couple of footnotes here. Of note, we requested the school facilities departments study school safety and security standards and report back to JAC by November of 14, along with the cost and the implementation recommending those standards. We also put in two full-time employees. These two full-time employees are time-limited. They'll time out at the end of the biennium in 2016. This is primarily due to the fact that we've got a lot of construction going around the state, and these folks were needed to make sure that it was efficiently implemented. Stand for any questions. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 27, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 27 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 29.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 29, Wyoming Water Development Officer Office, standard budget, no expansion. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 29, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 29 has been adopted. Next section for our consideration is Section 32.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 32, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority. There again, standard budget with the one-time cuts we made last year. One footnote, we directed this agency to work with the Wyoming Pipeline Authority and Business Council to develop areas of synergy, shared authority, efficiencies, and areas of opportunity for cooperative work. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 32, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 32 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 37.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 37, State Engineer. There again, Mr. Chairman, we had three footnotes. Two of them involved a potential conflict that the governor declared on groundwater management issues in southeastern Wyoming and the contract hydrographer services there. We went ahead and added those two that the governor had declared the conflict on. We also added a footnote to make a $70,000 general fund for the MVS charges effective immediately. They need a vehicle and some charges there. And, Mr. Chairman, We also had in the expanded budget, you don't see here, we added money for the e-permits maintenance program that they're doing with the computers for their permitting system. Call for the question.
All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 37, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 37 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 39.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 39, Wildlife Natural Resources Trust. Yield to my colleague from Lincoln County.
Series, those funds have been used for contract in the past. They have not been used recently, so that was taken care of. The governor asked for $10 million in projects. JC cut that back by $5 million. That went to the corpus. JC also moved $13 million to the Wildlife Trust project account. That included $5 million from the general fund, $8 million in investment income from the trust. Three footnotes were added in the committee. One directed the auditor to deposit $5 million to the trust income account. That's Fund 517. The second noted that money be directed to the public easement purchase, noted that when public easements are purchased, that there be specific provisions for public access to those easements. And finally, the third and final footnote authorized the auditor to deposit $5 million to the trust corpus. It's Fund 529. Ask, call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 39, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 39 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 40.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 40, Game and Fish Commission. Yield once again to my colleague from Lincoln County.
Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, the only change with this budget came when JC added the $210,000 for the support costs originally denied by the governor. The commission budget includes a regular 1.8 for aquatic invasive species, vet services 3.8, 1.8 for sage grouse, 1.8 for wolf management. That's the Game and Fish Commission budget. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 40, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 40 has been adopted. The next section for consideration is Section 41.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 41, Fire Prevention and Electric Safety. Yield to my colleague from Sweetwater County.
Senator Hastert.
Section 41, Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety. Here again, pretty much the standard budget. We made no changes to the governor's recs. They have the 650 fee, 424 in special revenue. Otherwise, everything's the same. Stand for questions. Move for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 41, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 41 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 42.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 42, Geological Survey. Once again, my colleague from Florida County.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here again, Geological Survey. Standard budget, 4968810. No changes to the governor's recs. Call for the question.
Question. Having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 42, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 42 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 44.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 44, the Insurance Department. Yield to my colleague from Lincoln County.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No changes to the insurance department. Total remains at $61 million. Budget includes $5.5 for administration, $11,000 for licenses, $29 million for health insurance pool, $61 million for the budget. Call for the question.
And Mr. Chairman, and one more thing. We did add one position there for the ACA. It's 1 year, time limited.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 44, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 44 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 45.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 45, Department of Transportation. Once again, my colleague from Lincoln County.
Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The first of the seven footnotes directed this department to pursue funding for the e-citation system. As you recall, this kind of fits under what the Supreme Court's doing. Second footnote called for more leasing of the communication towers to provide a report, which included more use of government and state, local and state governments using the WildLink towers. Under the third footnote, it called for a study of using state-owned planes and comparing it to using a charter service, coming back with a report. Air service enhancement grants were cut back by $500,000, and that was followed by footnotes. It put a priority system in place for air service grants based on the highest cash match, and all the matches should be at least 1%. And the fifth note directs all unused funds from air enhancement to be turned over to the budget reserve account. The sixth note takes statute from, the sixth footnote takes statues from the old Southeast Welcome Center, moves them to the new center. And the final footnote, number seven, immediately takes the railroad quiet zone funding, moves it from 11 and 12, that budget, to the 15-16 biennium. Call for the question.
Senator Von Flateren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the sponsors or for anybody in the committee. Where it says on page 33, line 24, the department shall revise its hourly aircraft rates. So that's mandatory, right? I understood the presentation to say that there's a study, but I think that says there's a study and they shall then revise. That's my one question. The other question has to do down with air service enhancement, line 11 and 10 and 11, where it says entities providing the highest match of financial resources on the priority list. I'm not sure I understand what that means.
Mr. Chairman,
President.
I'll take the footnote on the state airplanes, and my colleague from Campbell County is exactly correct. We wanted them to come up with a really cost to fly those airplanes, and then once they determine that, it's very simple. You add up all the pilots, you add up all the fuel, maintenance, and everything that occurs to, for those airplanes. They flew at X number of hours the last 2 years. You divide the total by the hours. That's your operating cost, and we're saying in this footnote that's what they shall charge. Very clear.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
My second question, Mr.
Senator Bonflater.
The second question on the highest match on the priority list, I didn't quite understand that.
Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just working off my notes. Could use some help, I guess, from the committee. But just a moment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know what it is. And what we did is, if you're talking about the air enhancement account,
yes.
In the air enhancement account, what we said is we would try to prioritize by whichever community came with the best deal, that they would have a priority. And that's the way that amendment is meant to read. I think that was a House amendment.
Yeah.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, the 1% I think is mute because I don't know of any program out there, minimum revenue guarantee, has been less than 20 or 28%. But I guess my question has to go to the reversions. And for those that don't know how the process works in the Air Service Enhancement Program, if we have a $500,000 contract at Cody for winter service from October 1st to May 31st, and at May 31st, we are only required to pay $200,000 of that. There's $300,000 out there that could stay within the program and go to help other cities. So I'm curious as to why the determination that all of the monies as of June 30, 2014 revert back to the general fund, when historically this program has had funds revolving into it with the idea that if you don't use them because you're doing well, some other community can. So I'd like some discussion on that.
Right, Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to give a little discussion. And some numbers that I have is Jackson received $460,000. This is the state's money now. Cody received $575,000, Gillette $2.4 million, Rock Springs $2.8 million. And some of the discussion we had in the committee was the validity of this and how to come up with some kind of a real cost approach to seeing how well the program worked. And then we have two other areas that are thinking about it now. One is Sheridan that has some serious issues. The other is Riverton. And in both areas, they're serviced by one particular airline, and the reliability is not anything we're very proud of, so they're talking to another particular airline. As I understand it, we had trouble finding out how much money was really left in there. We think we got an answer. We think it's about $2.1 million. But we also know that Sheridan, we think, is applying or trying to get the funding, so this money would go to the Sheridan project, as I understand it. but we don't know. And so the amendment was put in there, if they don't get something done, it shall revert. And that was a discussion we had.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, to pursue this reversions, the other side, and understand, and I recommend the Appropriations Committee read the management audit we did of the aeronautics and the air enhancement program to understand how this program works. But when you start trying to entice air service in, you have to understand that those companies have to see the money there. And if you revert it out of that account where they can't see it, quite frankly, there's such a demand for small airlines flying into, they just canceled them out of a couple towns in Iowa and one in Minnesota because the money wasn't there. These small airlines are in great demand because of the way the air industry is. If you take the reversions out, what isn't spent, and that's the reversions, then that company's going to look and say, now the money's gone, I'm not going to be there. The program is intricate, but understand it is the airlines that hold all the cards in this. But if you can leave the money there, oftentimes they won't use it. As long as they know it's there, they'll probably keep coming back to your community or they'll expand it to another community. But if you take the reversions out, the money drops, they'll go find some other little town that'll make sure the money's there. This probably would ruin the air enhancement program statewide. Because those companies will not mess around if the money, it's show me the money with those folks, and they are in the driver's seat.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Vice President,
that's a good assessment of it. I mean, you have to put the money out there to get the airline to come talk to you. Then you make the commitments, and they have to have certain criteria they meet. And if they meet it, then, and with your input, then the money comes back, and that's the way you flow it. If they don't meet it, then you lose the money. And so those are good arguments. And the only thing I would add to that is that when we tried to get into the nuts and bolts of it a little bit more, it was very difficult to see an amount that made a lot of sense in terms of how much do we really do. And I've been in going through the discussion and looking at, quite frankly, Riverton and Sheridan, and I'm come around a little bit more. I didn't think that would work in either community, but I'm having more discussions now, and it's something we may certainly need to look at for those two communities. The other issue we got into is one of the carriers in our state is creating some issues. They're so dependent on EAS that they're not serving other communities very well, and part of it's a pilot situation. And the FAA changed about a year ago that said your co-pilot has to have 1,500 hours, and before they were getting 200, 300, or 400 hours, but they made that change, and that's had a significant impact on all these smaller airlines. The bigger question for this body to be thinking about, you know, if we take this out and leave this in, whatever we decide to do, is down the road, all these airplanes that these smaller commuter airlines are flying are very old. You got the 1900 Beaches, you got the Brasilias. They're ancient aircraft, and when these aircraft start going out of service, what's going to replace them? And the only thing out there right now are these RJs, and they've got a 50-passenger one and a 70. And the bigger challenge is how do we cope with that, which is probably coming in. My colleague from Park County could speak to that better than me. Maybe that's 3 or 4 years from now. Maybe that's 7 or 8. But we're going to have a serious, serious problem. And you look at, like, what's going on in Colorado, Fort Collins has no air service. Pueblo has no air service. You can go around the country. A lot of communities used to have air service. People flying in and out are not doing it. Wyoming's unique. And because of the situation we have being able to do this, we can affect those markets and do have some benefits. But the bigger issue is what do we do down the road with these older airplanes, and they're not going to be in service anymore.
Senator Coe, let's go.
Well, Mr. Chairman, very well said by my good friend from Fremont County, but I want to reiterate what my good friend from Johnson County said, because I'm not quite sure that people really understand how this program works. If you have $2 million out there to spend or to enter into contracts and are minimum revenue guarantees, they aren't just, you know, give the community the money. At the end of the day, you calculate what's owed. For instance, if we have a $500,000 contract in Cody for winter service with an RJ from Cody to Denver with United, that money, once you sign that contract, and you probably sign it in July or August to have service that will start in October, that money's obligated. Pure and simple. It has to be dedicated to doing exactly that. Now, the good senator from Fremont County said that Cody got $575,000. We haven't gotten anything. We don't have a contract right now. We don't have a contract going on this winter. We're doing pretty well. So, Wyoming is really unique with this program. The airlines have a lot of things to do with their airplanes. And if you don't partner up with them and figure out a way to make them successful, they take their airplanes and go some other place. This program is unique in the country. There's over 100 communities that have lost air service. We're always going to be a small rural state. And if we want to have air service, we're going to have to step up to make it successful. So I just wanted to add that to the debate. I think the good senator from Fremont County is right on a lot of the stuff he says. There's a lot of interest from Sheridan and Riverton at this point in time. But I think clearly air service, if we want it in the state of Wyoming, we're going to have to partner up with them.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Vice President.
The other thing, Mr. Chairman, that why we had this discussion, and maybe there's someone that explained, could help me out even on this one that's on that committee, is if you put up a couple million dollars for a community for the minimum revenue guarantee, and they do really well, which is what you want, then that flows back and stays there, so the fund grows and grows, which is what you want. And we're trying to get a handle on how much it has grown, and that's where we have some difficulty. And that's part of the discussion as to why we did this.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe just as a follow-up to comments from my good colleague from the KC country and from up in Cody country, too. As I look back on the discussion in the committee, there was not a lot of discussion or emphasis put on the fact that if we keep money in the account, then that can be used as an enticement to keep these airlines coming in. That's maybe something we didn't understand fully. I mean, you and I, Mr. Chairman, live from an airport, so we don't understand that concept. And so I think that needs to be added to the discussion, the importance of leaving the money in the account as in the enticement.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, in addition to that, and indeed my hometown is going through great efforts to try and do this, and the idea that the money would revert on my birthday, June 30th, 2014, doesn't really give any community, especially mine, the time to actually do the negotiations, do any of this. So I would think that this section probably should be deleted, but at the least it should probably be set out till 2015 or 2016 before you would practice any sort of reversion.
Mr. Vice President.
The only other thing, Mr. Chairman, to let everybody understand, and that's fine if this body chooses to eliminate that footnote. You know, we're going to have $6.6 million in it. You add this into it, that puts it up. If it's not utilized to $8.6 million, there again, that's part of why we have the discussion on it. Call for the question.
All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 45, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 45 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 48.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 48, Department of Health, and call for the question.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. We'll start off, and just to, Mr. Chairman, if I can, start off and just did a little checking over the noon hour on some of the questions that we had earlier on the general questions. And first, back to some of the flex authority that was given. Most of the flex authority footnotes that were in the previous budget are still in this budget. However, going back and checking, again, on the flex authority that's in the Department of Health, which is a little bit different than the other departments, Mr. Chairman, is that inside of a program, the director can flex inside of a program. So he can flex inside the Medicaid program. But he can't flex from Medicaid program to the Medicare program, over to some other program. It's got to be flexed inside there. But even when he does that, those analysts, it's tracked, and so it just doesn't happen without it being tracked. And again, also, with respect to the Medicaid flex, the flex is also generally, if you run short in the Medicaid, that is out of the Section 100 series, and so those flexes come out of the series. And there have not been any flexes out of the Section 100 series, but no one would expect any until they actually ran out of money. So if they happen, they wouldn't happen until June, possibly May. But but that's when those would happen. Additionally, we also went back and staff checked with the budget director's analyst for the Department of Health to check on to see if there had been any even significant intra-program transfers. And there's been a few here and there, but none of any great significance. And so we haven't seen, for example, you might see in the waiver program, you might see it's possible you could move from ABI, acquired brain injury systems, over to other forms of, you could move that back and forth inside there. But there have been a few nominal transfers, but nothing of any significance. So if there's something very specific that somebody's concerned about, you need to give us the specifics, because looking to the system and double-checking with the analysts who would track those transfers, even if they weren't V11, that's just not happening yet. So anyway, with that, go to sleep or stay awake, but here we go. What we did is the Department of Health is the largest general fund budget that we have and comprises, actually comprises about half of the general fund on its total, but there's lots of money that flows through here. So all we did is start with the governor's recs, and we'll just go down through here. First of all, one of the first things we did is some of the flex things. If you look at footnote number one again, is authorizing the department to move general funds between biennial appropriations in order to reconcile accounts and close budgets. Those are intra-program transfers that I believe that we're talking about. Footnote number two that was added at the request of certain individuals on the Appropriations Committee. It turns out that some of the department institutions that employees are receiving free meals, and that upset some individuals of the JAC, and so they added a footnote that department employees needed to pay for their own meals. Some of the meals at some of the institutions are actually averaging over $10 a piece, so they're, which is a lot for an institutional meal. Number three, next thing we did is we adopted the governor's letter, a rec for to add $400,000 of general fund to help with the programs for patient-centered medical homes. We also added $100,000 of general fund money for hearing aids, and also added a footnote number three regarding hearing aids, trying to help out with some of that. We added a footnote number four requiring a report of Medicaid enrollees every 6 months to observe growth. All we're asking there for is we wanted just the number, not care who, we just want to know the numbers to see what happens, as we're for sure going to at least having the mandatory Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. So we want to see the budget and all that's been made upon the projections from the Milliman actuarial study. And so we're interested in seeing what those numbers are as they come in quarterly, so we can see whether we're close to the projections, whether we'll be short or long on what we've got appropriated moving forward. We also had a footnote number five specifying that there would be no cost of living increases unless required by statute granted to nursing homes or nursing facilities without legislative action. Again, bringing back to this body, if we want to increase the reimbursement rate to nursing homes, it's going to take legislative action as opposed to a departmental fiat. We also adopted the governor's letter to add $200,000 of general fund money to help for the Wyoming 211 system, which is basically kind of a system to help you find the right health care and the right services for you through the Department of Health. There was a small appropriation, $10,000 of general fund that was given to the department to provide or assistance or to assist with the childhood cancer survivor camps, which is kind of a new thing where children suffering from childhood cancer can go to these camps and they can kind of see they're not the only ones and can feel, kind of find people that they can identify with and going through or have gone through some of the same things they have. The JAC denied the governor's request for $1 million of general fund for a health care information exchange. We also added a footnote number seven authorizing the Public Health Laboratory to collect fees for services when those fees are collected, they cannot be done without legislative approval. The Public Health Laboratory collects fees for all kinds of services, and so we're just wanted to make sure that money goes into the general fund and that we look at it and it's appropriated appropriately instead of creating additional flex authority for the Department of Health. We added a footnote number eight authorizing the department to retain its contractual right to redirect funding as appropriate to address emergent issues and critical prevention service needs. Again, I believe that is intra-program transfers and not from one to the other, although obviously the B11 process exists. So mostly that's going to be from your Series 600, which are grants and aids, moving back and forth and applying that money where they feel it's appropriate if there's something that comes up. We also added footnote number 9, I think, which was to make $4,800,000 of tobacco money effective immediately for various issues that would be both for the remainder of this biennium as well as the rest. We also added $1,652,000 and change of general fund money for 1 year funding of preschool services, and added a footnote directing the department to work with the Department of Education to ensure a maintenance of effort requirements have been met, and to request the Attorney General regarding overall maintenance of effort compliance. What this is you go through and look at the preschool funding and what they're doing, Mr. Chairman. There's some confusion about whether or not you can ever reduce the amount spent on preschool services, and in some cases the number of students have gone down, but the claim is that you can't decrease this level below where it's ever been. You can always go up, but once you go up, you can never drop back down. We're not sure if that's true or not, but what this $1.6 million and change does is it brings us back up to that maintenance of level effort, and then also directs the Attorney General to look into that and let us know so that we can have an opinion about whether that's so or not. There's some ins and outs with respect to that. We also, if you look at, I think there's a number of SIPA transfers. There's $30 million. So there's some, you'll see some moving around on pages 110, on different pages of the budget. Long story short, what we're doing is we're taking $30 million of the capital gains from the SIPA account, which is a special investment project account. And what we're trying to do is start to set that aside, because there's a number of things we have to do as we go out with the institutions that we have, the state hospital, the learning center in Lander, the veterans home. We've got to go and look at those things. And these institutions, ultimately, they need a lot of work. We need to make sure that the physical arrangement and outlay of the institution will actually promote and assist in the efficiency of the services that are delivered in those institutions. And so that's going to be a big price tag in the future. So the governor and the JAC agreed, I think, that the starting this and collecting this money in here so that we can begin to address it. Nothing's going to be spent yet, but it's kind of like the same thing, recognizing the same things we had with solid waste. You might as well start setting some money aside, because it's going to be an expensive price tag. And, well, you got a lot of work to do before we know how we would spend that, but we might as well get started on that. We also added some footnotes requiring the department to solicit personally identifiable information from service providers with request to their request for reimbursement. There's some concern, and there's actually some anecdotal evidence that we're being double billed on a regular basis. And one of the reasons that there's no authority in the department right now to ask for personal identifying information like a Social Security number or something else that would identify that, so you can see if people are getting double billed. We believe that there's at least anecdotal evidence that it is. By granting the department that, we'd be able to find out if that is happening. Obviously, the department should pay for the services it's getting, but it shouldn't have to pay twice. We also added a footnote directing the department to ensure that it's a pair of last resort in certain instances, because there's some other times where there's other agencies. Sometimes you find that agencies go off and they'll use federal funds or other monies. They're supposed to be matching, but sometimes the state funds get advanced first, and ultimately, even sometimes when it's supposed to be 50-50, it doesn't work out that way. We also added a footnote authorizing the director to offer severance packages at the Life Resource Center for vacancy savings. So we look at the number of individuals that was reported to us in our discussions at the JAC, that the Learning Center, the Resource Center, Life Resource Center, has that they've got excess staff, but they're state employees, and you just can't, you know, there's certain inabilities to deal with or to sever state employees. And so going out there and seeing if you can structure early severance packages or early retirement packages there to get the staff right-sized. Also added a footnote number 14, which specifies the transfer of $500,000 of general fund money from outpatient substance abuse treatment to services to residential substance abuse treatment services, which was a need that was I believe in our discussions believe that was necessary. Added another footnote number 15, authorizing expenditure and collection of funds in a special revenue account at the state hospital to be used for life safety issues and emergency detention services. So that as they do, as they collect money from private pay or some other things, that they can actually capture that money and have it available on staff on site to use for those types of issues. Another footnote specifying reimbursement to preschool service providers shall be made proportionate to the funds available. What we're really trying to say there is they get what they get, but ultimately if the amount exceeds the appropriation that ultimately will be, that people take and there's not enough to cover everything, that they'll take proportional, they'll have to, the proportionally they'll be paid as opposed to first come, first served. Second, we adopted the governor's recommendation request to add additional $500,000 of general fund for senior services boards. We also added a footnote number 17 authorizing the collection expenditure of special revenue funds at the retirement centers. With that, there's a lot of things going on in the Department of Health. I'm sure you've got some questions, but we'll stop there and if there's no questions, we'll call for the questions, but I anticipate, Mr. Chairman, that there will be a few.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, yes, there will be a few. Mr. Chairman, when I compare the Medicaid budget this time in the it's more than Medicaid. It's got the SCHIP in there, too. The health care financing budget, I see $597.5 million appropriation this time for general fund. Looking at the budget we passed in 2012, it's $560.7 million. You've got a fair increase there, $30 million vicinity, general fund, similar increases in the federal funds. I wonder if we could have a little explanation of that. How much of that is increase in costs, because there is health inflation in the world, to do what we have been doing. How much of that is, are there enrollment changes as our economy improves to offset that? So how much has to do with enrollments there? And how much of that, and are there some provider reimbursement cuts there? And how much of that is due to the mandatory Obamacare population increases in Medicaid? Do we have any breakdown for that's a fairly sizable increase in our state budget. Do we have any breakdown of where that's coming from?
Yes. Senator Perkins.
Sure we do. I mean, look at this budget, man. It's big. We've got all kinds of information. And you're exactly right, Mr. Chairman. The tallest senator from Natrona County is exactly right. So I'll go back and just go through some of these things. I believe that the standard, the standard budget request for the Medicaid program is $72 million, $72,237,403, of which some of those are general funds, some of those are special revenue funds, in there are tobacco funds, but the vast majority of that is federal funds and general funds. And some of those that come along there is that one of the things that we have is let's see, if I get down through here, we've got in the administration of mandatory Medicaid population caused by the ACA, I believe that we've got another $2.9 million related to the mandatory Medicaid population caused by the ACA. We've got also in here the Medicaid Management Information System, which is a replacement system. It's a 90-10 match, with the state doing 10% and the federal doing 90%. And I believe that, when we look at that, it is, the total project cost is estimated at $75 million, with $18.75 million, or 25% of that total amount being in the current biennium. So there's $18.75 million is related to the beginning of the Medicaid Information Management System replacement. We've also got, there is also the transferring of the Medicaid eligibility system positions from DFS. Those come in at about $1.8 million. So those are the employees that used to be the Medicaid eligibility was performed by the Department of Family Services. That's been transferred to the part. Well, you're saying no, but that's what the budget says, my good friend. But let me check my notes here really quick. 12 positions and their associated supportive services and restrictive services are being moved from the DFS to the Department of Health. And there was a corresponding reduction in the DFS for the same amount. Then there was also Medicaid eligibility system maintenance. This is another software system that has to do with the system maintenance. That's a new system, was quite expensive and in there, but now we've got to maintain it now that this new system is up and running. And I believe that one is also $1.9 million. So I think that takes us through the additions or the changes, the exception requests that were in the budget for the healthcare financing system. Is there more questions?
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since the Medicaid eligibility has come up, there is a statute, Mr. Chairman, that says that's the Department of Family Services responsibility. And the reason it was done that way was it put all these programs that are basically needs-based, part of the general welfare system, in one place, so you have a one-stop shop in the DFS offices where people go to one place to become eligible. And that statute is still on the books. The requirement is that Department of Family Services do that. The Health Department did approach Committee 10 initially saying, we ought to change that statute, and they withdrew that request. And now I see it's come in the budget. I've heard a number of presentations saying this new Medicaid eligibility system was going to essentially do it through the computer, but now I'm seeing a whole bunch of physicians transferring over to Department of Family Services. And it strikes me that we've got an empire building end run around the legislature and the normal process for reorganizing a state government, where we're shifting a responsibility that may well decline the services that are available to the people that need it, because now you got two different bureaucracies to deal with instead of just one. And I really wonder if we shouldn't undo that transfer and tell them to come back, and the first step is to modify the statute, not just to change the budget, so that we can come through in the regular process and look at the costs and benefits of doing what we're going to do. So I have grave concerns about this part of the budget, and is the Health Department going to build an empire where they've got local offices all over the state? What's going on here? Does DFS still has a statutory responsibility? If a client comes into a DFS office, can they get signed up to Medicaid, or do they have to get sent down the hall to the Health Department office? Or is this just the people to maintain the system? And, Mr. Chairman, my second question is that eligibility system, in fact, working? The testimony we had, Mr. Chairman, in Committee 10 We had two different meetings. My recollection is they said, well, it should be working in the next week or two. And they said that twice. And I'm wondering, is it at all working? It's supposed to interface with the new health exchanges, and it's something we very much need. But is this system at all working? So those are my questions at this point. How can they do this in the budget without first changing the statute? Or is this budget just something you put together without reference to the statute? And is the basic thing working at all?
Senator Perkins.
Sure. Well, that's, you know, it's interesting, and I appreciate those thoughts, but we had the same debate in the supplemental last year. I mean, we talked about this isn't new. We knew this was going. And in fact, we knew that in come October that those transfers were going over. I mean, we talked about this last year. So if it's a surprise, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that that happened. Whether or not it's statutory, you know, there's lots of things, Mr. Chairman, that seem to happen around here that don't have a lot to do with what's in the statute. But, you know, and I say that, you know, because somewhat out of frustration, it's just not here. There's lots of other places. You know, whether that's, you know, I don't know that we address that. Obviously, we can address it in the budget. If there's an amendment that comes to do that, we can have that debate. But this is the budget, and whether we finance them in DFS or whether we finance them in the Department of Health, we're still going to have to finance them. And back to the specific questions about that, my understanding is the Medicaid eligibility system is complete, and it just started. I mean, they're supposed to do that, and they're if it's anything like the software, never get new software in my office, Mr. Chairman. It's a bit of a struggle when I first start. It never works quite like it's supposed to. But despite that, and I don't know how many of the people that have transferred over from DFS to run this system have pulled their hair out over it. But nevertheless, this is supposed to be a zero net gain. These are the people that are processing the systems, and initially they've got to continue to process them by hand as well as with the system, to see if to make sure the system is doing what the system is supposed to do. So there's got to be a little parallel going for a little while. But ultimately, we asked some of those questions about how the transition is going so far. They believe the Department of Health, since it pays Medicaid, it believes that there will be some efficiencies and some savings associated with determining the eligibility as well. And so once they determine the eligibility, there it goes. As we had a little bit of a presentation on the Medicaid eligibility system, but how you go in and how you apply, and you can do those things online. If you do it online, ultimately you can have an eligibility determination almost potentially instantaneously once you get all the way through the system. But if you're uncomfortable, you can't get to the system, you still have the ability to call in and talk to a real high human being and go through that system. I do not believe that we're not going to have, which is to some degree I find a little bit disconcerting, but we're not going to have numbers of offices around the state like we had in the DFS situation. You could go into your local office. I don't know if they've closed them all yet, but over time it's anticipated, as my understanding, that there will not be offices all over the state to take these things in. There may be some resource offices here and there, but it's not going to be like it used to be. So I think that we're waiting to see how well it works, because it's so new. They just rolled it out. Like I said, I think they started rolling it out in October, November time frame. And so in the meanwhile, we'll check and we'll have some information for a second reading to tell you where it's at and what it's doing. We'll see if we can check back, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I'm unclear, these 12 people, are they the ones that maintain the system, or are they the ones that are some of the ones that are doing eligibility in the field right now? You know, I know we need a new system, all right. But I think if we just depend on the system and don't use the DFS personnel, you're going to see a much higher fraud rate and a lot more difficulty with the legitimate claimants getting enrolled. So I really caution the Senate on this, that this has been the bureaucrats arranging the world to suit their convenience, and it may very well not be in the state's interest. And one way or another, we need to have a hard look at this and see, is it something we really want to do in the way it's being organized? I continue, and I've had over the years, quite a bit of reservations about things. I keep being reassured it's really not going to change. It's just we're going to have the computer do all these wonderful things. And I really wonder about this one. Mr. Chairman, another question. In the area, in I believe it's in the public health budget, there's considerable prevention money, and that system was changed within the past biennium. And frankly, what happened in my community was the people that were actually doing effective prevention and treatment, and part of the prevention was some treatment of the people who were injured. The money came away from them, and it went to a big administrative organization that is making a few PR efforts, but appears to be singularly ineffective. And would like to know how much money was involved there, because that might be a good place where we could just cut the budget, because what's been done has been just, at least judging by my community, totally ineffective, and replaced a set of effective programs with a small local bureaucracy. And I'd be very interested in that, and I think we may need to find some kind of a remedy for that problem, because I think it's not just my community that has trouble.
Is that the community services? Senator Barnard.
Is that community services?
Mr. Chairman, we've been really interested in the developmental, the DD waivers, developmental disability waivers. The governor was supposed to put in $10 million, and we were supposed to get a $10 million match from the feds. Is this in this budget here? If it is, could you tell me where it's at?
Mr. Vice President, oops. Senator Perkins.
Sure, we can tell you that. Which is it? Do you know which waiver program you're talking about? With you know, adults, children, ABI. What do you know? Which one? Okay, I guess we can go through them all then. If you're talking about the one that was the $10 million, that there was a reduction in waiting list request, and that's in the adult development in the adult developmentally disabled waiver. And so what there was the governor requested $9,702,728, of which 50% would come from federal funds and 50% come from the general funds. That was the governor's request, and I believe that and what that did was it would decrease the waiting list to 18 months. But keep in mind that whenever look at these things, when we're talking about 18 months, we're talking about a specific number of waivers. And so you look, and so it would be if with this request as it came in, the request funds somewhere between 172 to 234 adults that have been on the waiting list as of 9/30/2013. So you're looking at the waiting. They're looking at the waiting list as of that date. The waiting list changes every day, and so when we talk about this, the concept is that it gets it down to approximately 18 months, but it's 18 months as of a certain date, and then it's not going to be that you automatically doesn't guarantee that the longest anybody has to wait is 18 months. What we're doing is we appropriate a certain amount of money. The intent is it would reduce it to 18 months for those that as that list existed as of 9/30, but nevertheless, as that list exists at 9/30 of next year, they might be waiting 18 or 19 or 20 months, or maybe they're waiting 16 or 17 months, because it's a certain amount of money and waivers as opposed to a guarantee that no one ever has to wait. No one has to wait longer than 18 months. Hopefully that answers your question.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, item number 9 there, where the governor had requested letter number 11, $1 million for the health care information exchange. It's my understanding that began about 3 years ago. $4.2 million was a grant from the federal government through the ARRA money. And the concern I have is that I thought it was probably a pretty valuable program, with the idea and concept of sharing information, as you referred to another specialist, maybe out of state, and having that information shared of possible tests that you've already done, so on and so forth, procedures. And, of course, the JAC recommended that be denied the $1 million. The concern I have, Mr. Chairman, is that there are five hospitals in our state that are presently involved with this health care exchange, health information exchange. Some of them can probably absorb, after they've begun the program, into their annual cost, but two of these out of the five, South Bighorn Hospital and Weston County, concern me. I think that probably those programs would be dropped, and it would be a shame. And I'm just wondering if the JAC asked that question to the Department of Health, the concerns maybe of how valuable this program has been. I'd like to gather that information if possible, if that discussion was even had with the department during the testimony.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just specifically to the question about the $1 million was in the governor's letter, and what that specifically was for was the health electronic records. And so Wyoming's eHealth partnership facilitates electronic health care information exchange. And this is what was in the governor's letter. Over the past 2 years, eHealth successfully added 30% of Wyoming's hospitals to Wyoming's health information exchange. He recommended $1 million to fund the Department of Health to continue this investment in the technology. And that came before the JAC, and the JAC did not approve that portion of the governor's letter. Also, if I can, going back specifically, Mr. Chairman, on the individuals that are supporting the Medicaid eligibility system, 12 are eligibility caseworkers. They're the ones who actually determine eligibility. There was actually a 13th one, and that's the project manager. That's the project manager, which I believe is a temporary position. Let me back off of that. It's the project manager that I think oversees this transition, and I think it's temporary. It's not permanent. So once the system is fully implemented and assimilated, the project manager goes away.
Any other questions? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, during the presentation, there was a discussion of nursing homes having to, and I couldn't fully understand what was going on, but it sounded like the nursing homes, before we increased any provider reimbursement rates there, had to come back through the legislature. Was there a scheduled rebasing of nursing homes that this provision then short-circuits sometime in the next biennium?
Senator Perkins?
I do not believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, there is a system of periodically rebasing nursing homes. We've had some very close calls with nursing homes going under. I think we continue to have some in shaky financial conditions. I think there is a statute that requires a rebasing periodically, and I really wonder about a provision that short-circuits that, whether we're putting in the budget bill something that should come as a statutory change and be considered that way, and what the practical effect is. Mr. Chairman, as was the discussion earlier, we've got at least three sets of institutions where we are at real risk of having some kind of a crisis during the coming biennium, where an institution that we can't do without and provide decent services to our citizens is facing basically going out of business. Nursing homes are one of those sets. And we had testimony in Committee 10, Mr. Chairman, during the summer. Some of the discussion was that in some of the small rural hospitals, the hospital was supporting the nursing home, and it was threatening to drag the hospital down. I think the hospitals are facing some particular challenges in the environment, and the smallest ones due to the potential of federal cutbacks. The nursing homes are facing some potential federal cutbacks in the Medicaid area. I think we're running some real risk with the nursing homes. Mr. Chairman, with the hospitals, the threat is compounded for not just the small ones but the larger ones by the risk that these new boutique hospitals are going to come in and take away their profitable patients and put some of those under. And I'm real concerned in the reimbursement in this whole set of areas, and wonder if that footnote isn't a mistake, and if we don't need to take a careful look at what's actually going on, because I think we have some sudden and somewhat unpredictable, because they're outside our control, some sudden risks to some really essential healthcare operations in this state.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't necessarily disagree that we need to look at that. The footnote itself says this, reimbursement rates for nursing facility services, no cost of living adjustment or other increase in rates shall be provided in the 2015-2016 biennium budget. And then here's the bigger eraser, Mr. Chairman, this is the exceptions, without either one, specific legislative action approving the increase, and two, unless the adjustment or increase is required by law. So if there's something in the statute that requires a rebasing or adjustment, the footnote's not precluding that. The other thing it's saying is that absent that, the department can't just go out and raise it without coming to the legislature for that approval. To me, that's, again, we had a little bit of this discussion the other day, but ultimately I don't know that we can just open up the checkbook and let the department write it without some kind of legislative oversight. But we weren't trying to short-circuit that. We're specifically allowing for, if we have said it somewhere else, once in a while we manage to find consistency among ourselves. So if the statute requires a rebasing or an increase, then that should happen.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, that does alleviate some of my fears, because if there is then a scheduled rebasing, it can proceed. The further question I have for the committee is, how would the committee feel about modifying that footnote to say that no decreases can occur? Because as the budgets get under pressure, that tends to be the recourse that they have, is to simply cut the reimbursements. And I think that could get us in trouble, too.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, with respect to that last comment from one of the members of the JAC, I think that language is intended to preempt the statutory rebasing and as well as the cost of living increases. I mean, they can always do the process, but any changes in increase the price has to come to the legislature. When times were great, we went in and modified a bunch of statutes, several statutes in several areas that mandated, required automatic cost of living increases. And at some point, you have to say, for the same reasons that the good senator from Natrona County says, it's outside of our control. There are management issues out there. More hospitals are starting up. They're taking the cream of the crop. The state of Wyoming can't be the first resource to continually increase the amount of budgets to address those competitive factors that we don't have control over. But we have three or four areas where we suspended COLAs, and I think this continues those suspensions, and they have to be done by legislative action because we found that rebasing and those other mechanisms to automatically increase payments to these institutions, frankly, it was going to kill our budgets.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, we're seeing some of the difficulty with the Medicaid program and its structure. I would suggest you think about a couple of things. With the nursing homes, the state of Wyoming is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And almost, not quite, but almost two-thirds of their income comes from the Medicaid program. If they get hit with cost increases because they can no longer compete in the market with the reimbursements we give, for the necessary personnel. Then you get third-class service for our citizens, and we in the past have come back with special legislation to increase their reimbursement to solve that problem, and I suspect we would do so again. And if that footnote does as was just described, then you're asking for trouble in this particular area. And I would also suggest that if you start losing particularly hospitals, and it depends a little which one, but if you get a great big swatch of the state where there's no longer a hospital available, Mr. Chairman, because outside conditions bankrupted the existing public hospital, we're going to be back down here to fix that because we simply cannot live with that. That means you're going to start killing off our citizens because they can't get health care. That means you're going to destroy any economic development opportunity in that whole area. You're going to get the state a big black eye if there's, say, pieces of the I-80 corridor, or if you're in a wreck, tough. You can't get to a hospital in time because there isn't one. We need to, you know, it's all very fine to say that's their problem, but I can guarantee you if the problem gets out of hand, it'll be our problem. And, you know, those are necessary public institutions, both to take care of our obligation for the necessary support of the poor and to take care of our basic obligations to protect the public health. And there's some possibilities there that you just can't live with.
Any further discussion on the section 48? All in favor of Vice President Spielbout's motion to adopt section 48, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Section 48 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is section 49.
Mr. Chairman, I move section 49, Department of Family Services. Yield to my colleague from Lincoln County.
$1,000 for data storage. In the governor's letter, $500,000 for a statewide juvenile data system. We were told that there's a need for a central repository for everything from the courts to the treatment centers, and that's what that was for. JC footnote, limited residential treatment facilities to certification as of January 2012. This is because there were a case of too many beds. We had 220 out of 485 beds that were being used, and they just needed to kind of catch up with the program, get it better organized. Second note, put $274,000 into Father Factor. This goes through June 30th, 2016. A third note, designated state supplemental income payments for eligible recipients. This is part of the Medicaid program where the recipients receive roughly $25 a month to help with anything from toothpaste to hygiene projects. And those were the significant changes in the Department of Family Services.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, one other thing, and we've had quite a discussion about the transfer from DFS to the Department of Health. And in this, and you'll see in this budget, those 12 positions are transferred out of DFS, and they show up in Department of Health. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebounds, motion to adopt Section 49, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 49 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is 51.
Mr. Chairman, I move for adoption of Section 51 Livestock Board. Yield to my colleague from Goshen County.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we're looking at the Livestock Board here. The total on that one is $18,039,000. A lot of that's special revenue, which is the brand inspections and brand registrations going back. There is a footnote, this general fund appropriation, $50,000, to be used for increased costs associated with management of strayed and abandoned animals. That's just one of those things that the Livestock Board doesn't have any specific money for, so we budget a little bit of general fund money for hay and different things like that. So any questions? Glad to take them. If not, I call for the question.
Question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 51, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 51 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 53.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 53, Department of Workforce Services, yield my colleague from Sweetwater County.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 53, Workforce Services. They had numerous requests on some funding corrections, instead of general fund, federal funds, and we had numerous requests where they just moved the priority. We did add $500,000 for the LSO Hathaway study, and then they had requested $2 million for the Workforce Development Training Grant funds, and the governor cut that down to $1 million. And then the employment support funds was at $4 million. The governor cut it to $2 million. And then we said, as far as that appropriations of the $2 million on those special funds, that they would be effective immediately. Otherwise, we went with the governor's recs for this agency. And, of course, they had some of the usual IT requests that we've been seeing across the board.
Question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 53, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 53 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 55.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 55, Oil and Gas Commission. Members of the Senate, standard budget, the only thing that we did in this that deals with the orphan wells, and we added $3 million more dollars to deal with this issue. And, of course, all of this money is funded out of a tax on the producers. There's no general fund money involved in this. That was the first footnote. The second footnote, we added that before they start spending this money on the orphan well remediation, they submit a plan, and it's authorized by the commission and consistent with the governor's recs. The third thing we did, Mr. Chairman, is we added a footnote for our colleague, departed colleague, from Campbell County dealing with some of these plug and abandonments on private lands. And the genesis of the footnote is that if they're going to go out and plug and abandon one of these coal bed methane wells on private land, that they give the landowner the option, if they want it, instead of putting cement in it, should they want to use it in a future date for a water well, to plug it to seal it with just a sealant with some pellets, and therefore it'd be a lot easier to convert it. And then, of course, there's some liability involved in that. And so what we directed, we couldn't really tell them what we wanted to do. It's a statutory change in a budget footnote. But what we told them is that the Oil and Gas Commission would develop rules consistent with what we're trying to do, which is help the landowner out. If they wanted one of these orphan wells, CBM wells for water well at some future point in time, that rather than plugging it with cement, they could plug it with some bentonite chips and utilize it later. Call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 55, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 55 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 57.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 57, Community College Commission. Yield to my colleague from Goshen County.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, we're on the Community College Commission here. We got a few footnotes coming up. First of all, the total budget on that is $256,959,105. There's 15 full-time employees. We put $9 million into the enrollment formula. That's the 2000 bill that I spoke about earlier in the session. Essentially, we tightened it up a little bit to make sure that they were actually completions, so they just weren't people that enrolled. They had to complete the classes. The next footnote, Mr. Chairman, has to deal with the Community College Commission submitting a budget for health care benefits and the benefited positions. Footnote number three. We had some discussion about the rodeo athletic program. We essentially put $35,000 out there for the different community colleges that have
rodeo program. That's the support and training, coaching and recruitment of rodeo athletes. Then footnote number four, Mr. Chairman, we put $70,000 out in that, and that's to defray some of the services for room and board to Wyoming high school students attending athletic and other extracurricular camps and events at a community college. There was testimony that our surrounding states allow that, and if we're going to familiarize our Wyoming students with the campuses across our state, that we should at least keep up with the competition. Mr. Chairman, footnote number five specifies that the amounts appropriate in 1, 3, and 4 are not to be distributed according to the funding model. The reason for that is because they're specific to different events that and conditions that are at the different colleges that is different than the funding model. Footnote number six, Mr. Chairman, we defunded $40,000 on the teacher shortage loan program. It was felt that we've pretty much taken care of that with good high teacher salaries. And there really hasn't been a demand for that program, so we decided to take the funds out of it. Mr. Chairman, essentially the same thing can be said about the defunding on the $230,000 of special revenue on the adjunct professor loan program. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions or call for the question if there are none.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding footnote number six and the adjunct professor loan program, one of the reasons last year that I supported that program is that I thought, and maybe the committee members can help me with this, I thought that that played into some of our equality of opportunity concerns that we have with respect to the Campbell decisions. And you might recall that this program was specific to the western part of the state where we've got some school districts out there which are fairly remote, and in order to provide that college level opportunity for those students, there was a need to try to get these teachers up to speed. Maybe a little bit more conversation about what you might have heard in the committee? No, really, please. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, that particular part of the conversation, the committee didn't hear anything about those specific reasons for the adjunct professor loan program. There's certainly things that, you know, we could probably ask the Community College Commission to get back to us to see whether or not it was utilized, and you know, we can query them a little bit more, but that wasn't brought up. Essentially, it was a program that wasn't used, so it was something they could do without, but we can ask them to see whether or not that this thing might have a little bit of legs and maybe fund it at a lower level or something. But so we'll get back with the commission and address your specific concern with them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Hearing none. All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 57, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 57 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 60.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 60, State Lands and Investments, to my colleague from Goshen County.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, state lands and investments, the total on that one is $115,908,324. We've got a few footnotes in here. Footnote number one addresses a concern that we had with the State Loan and Investment Board going out and purchasing large tracts of lands or ranches, and even though there is some prohibition about that in the statutes, we went ahead and cited that one statute and made it explicit in the budget that they had to seek legislative approval for any land purchases with a fair market value of over $2 million. So we hope that we get our message across with this one, Mr. Chairman. The second footnote, Mr. Chairman, has to do with divesting some interest that we have in fiber optic lines. This is one of those great investments the state made earlier where we got a lot of dead fiber out there. We put some money into it, and or dark fiber, and we're hoping we can get something out of it, but I think it's going to be pennies on the dollar, Mr. Chairman. The next one on footnote number three, Mr. Chairman, we reduced $147,300 in special revenue and the same amount in general funds for the trust land preservation account, Mr. Chairman. And this allows for an expenditure of $175,000 for one authorized at-will employee. And this is to work in the contract position to work in cooperation with the Federal Bureau of Land Management. There's quite a little bit of timber over in the area of Carbon, Albany, and Sweetwater. BLM isn't able to get around that. And so we're putting some funds in there for an at-will employee so we can try to get some of those timber sales going where we're getting some interest in logging in that area, Mr. Chairman. Looking at footnote number four, Mr. Chairman, we deny the governor's rec of $5 million for pine bark mitigation, Mr. Chairman, and I'm looking like we put back in four from the fire suppression account, and so we basically reduced it by $1 million. Footnote number 5A, Mr. Chairman. We looked at redefining the grant parameters of the SLIB board, and that primarily goes into the top of page 51, Romanet 4, where this was added by a House member. It says, provide corridor beautification equal matching grants for highway entrances to Wyoming municipalities. There's concern from the center part of the state that they've just got ugly highways, Mr. Chairman, and they wanted to do something about it. So, Mr. Chairman, that goes through footnote number 5. Okay, we talked about 6, which was the $4 million for the emergency fire suppression. Footnote number 7, we denied $120,000 for one crew carrier, but we left $120,000 for another crew carrier to fight fires. We denied the governor's rec of $148,000 in general fund to increase helicopter availability. They wanted to add some days within the fire season for their quick attack helicopter service. We left it at what it has been. We moved $3 million of S4 money to Section 328 court security funding, and that's that bill that's been moving through the process. So we'll take a look at that and see whether or not it stays in here or goes with the bill, Mr. Chairman, and have some discussion about that probably. And then the footnote number 5 we talked about was the corridor beautification. So with that, I'd ask for any questions. If there are no questions, then I'd call for the question.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about footnote 2, which is the one where we request that the Board of Land Commissioners actively seek options to divest itself of fiber optic lines. I'm concerned about this one. I'm interested in hearing what the background is, what brought this to JAC and who testified in support of it, because it seems to me that that's a real asset the state has. And while I can see exploring uses of that asset, the fact that we're making a recommendation through this footnote to divest ourselves of it kind of has me concerned. I'd like to know a little bit more background on it. What was the position of CIO Flint Waters on it, and how does this relate to possible use for the unified network, if I can get more clarification?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Vice President?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer that. This dark fiber and this entire fiber line came around under Governor Geringer's term, and that's when fiber was really becoming a hot topic. And what the state of Wyoming did, as I recall, is they negotiated with some rights-of-ways on our highways, but in return for that, they asked someone to in fact install a fiber line from Cheyenne. Essentially, there's some question on part of it who really owns it, because of the person that put the fiber in the company went into bankruptcy, but it goes all the way from Cheyenne, clear west across our state and to Evanston. Now that's been lit up, and that fiber is hot from here to Laramie. And that's a lot of the fiber that's being utilized from NCAR and the data storage you have at the university, and those things. But everything essentially from there west has been dark. And so that's been 8, 12, 14, 15, 16 years. And in the discussions with private industry, and it does tie into the unified network, because part of the unified network, and you'll see a footnote in there when we get to the ETS system, is there was concern about competition with the private sector. And so there's a footnote in there that I think allows the ETS to do what they want to with the unified network, yet satisfies the concerns the private sector had. During those negotiations, quite frankly, with the private sector, and I was involved some of them, I talked to them about, well, we ought to do something with that fiber. You know, and the state owns it, and we don't want to be in the business of it, so it has to be somebody in the private sector that would do that, because we have, when we go from 2 gigs to 100 gigs for the unified network, we're set up to do that. And so that's the purpose of this, is to try to do something with that dark fiber that's been sitting there for 14, 15 years. The interesting thing about this, and somebody in this room that knows a lot more about it than I do, has they've told me that there's so many other fiber lines now in place that our value that we once thought was worth a lot of money may not be worth very much money now. And so my thinking was, the longer we have it, the less valuable it might get. There's an asset, we might want to try to put it to use, so we thought we'd solicit some bids to see if it has value.
Senator Anderson.
In regard to footnote number 8, the Hill attack or the helicopter, my question would be, what is the current contract period for those services? When do they begin? When do they end? Second part of the question, how much time or how many days would the amount of money that was removed have bought had we allowed that?
Mr. Chairman,
President.
You know, I can't tell you. We'll get that information for you as to terms of the length of the contract, the amount. This particular amount of money was money that was just paid to them, as I understand it, so they would stand by. This wasn't for actual use. This was standby time, but we'll get that information for you, and we'll give it to you tomorrow.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask some questions on footnotes 4, 5, and 6. 4, just the fact that the committee denied $5 million. 5 is the AWAC position for tree marking, and I would like to know what trees do they mark and why. I have a feeling that it is the trees that have been hit by the pine bark beetle. On 6, added back 4 million SO, so it's not adding back 4 million general fund, it's SO, from the county emergency fire suppression account, and I'd like to know what that is and where the SO money comes from. For pine bark beetle remediation, I'd like to know what pine bark beetle remediation means.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Vice President.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer those in reverse. The pine bark beetle remediation is a program that this legislature instituted in the last couple of years in the northeastern part of our state to have a private sector public partnership to go up there and try to eradicate these trees and cut off the disaster these beetles cause before it gets out of control. And so we've been funding it in the past. The Ag Committee has been very much aware of that. My colleague from Northeastern Wyoming can get up and speak to it. It's been a good program. It's worked. So we have spent, I believe, $4 million the last biennium to do that. And the governor came with a $5 million recommendation out of general fund. We reduced it by $1 million, and then we took the $4 million. We have a fire suppression account, and that's exactly what it is. It's money we appropriate in case we have fires so we can deal with it. You all remember what happened 2 years ago where we had such a huge fire season, and it cost us like $43 million, and the governor had to do a lot of different things with reversions to take care of that. The account currently has about $24 million in it. We owe some bills still, believe it or not, from 2 years ago, so we have money set aside for that. And we put the money in there for the beetle mitigation to come out of that fire suppression account. Now, the risk we run, it's a good program. If we have a tough fire season, then the governor's going to have to make a choice, and it's really not much of a choice. If there's a fire, we're going to have to fight it. And the risk we run is that we'll have a bad fire season. Of course, with the moisture, we're hoping we won't. And then we wouldn't have the money there to do the beetle mitigation. As far as the AWIC position, that deals with the Medbow Forest. And I'll yield to my colleague from Carbon County to talk about that.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, what we have is a situation where we have a substantial amount of suitable timber base on the BLM ground in Carbon County. We've now got two sawmills that are up and running in Carbon County. We have a third sawmill down in Colorado that's owned by a Wyoming business. What the problem is right now is there's only two foresters for the BLM in the whole state of Wyoming, one in Cheyenne and one in Kemmerer. We've been meeting with the BLM for approximately 3 or 4 months now, trying to figure out to develop a program to get access to that beetle-killed timber on those BLM lands. And what they have right now is an impediment of the ability to bring in a very highly qualified forester to lay out the timber sales, mark the trees, and help establish those timber sales. So what this position is a two-year temporary position in the State Forestry Division that the BLM has agreed to house in the Rollins Field Office. Their primary and only responsibility will be to go out and start to put together these timber sales on the BLM ground, do the layouts and the marking and the inspection on those things to try to get timber running into the sawmills. Now, what the BLM is committed to doing with that is they're going to bring on another employee, and they're basically going to work side by side to this highly skilled position that we would bring in that's a qualified forester would then be in a position to then help work side by side. And in 2 years, BLM is committed to have a full-time position with a very qualified forester in the BLM office. So the intent is to support those local businesses that we have that provide over 120 jobs in Carbon County. Without that timber industry, we can't manage that resource right now. So this is a kind of a preemptive program to get that expertise on the ground as quickly as possible this summer and start getting those timber resources coming into those mills in that area. So with that, I'd stand for any questions on that.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks to the good senator from Casper in front of me. He directed me to the page on this helicopter attack program. Basically, the contract today is for 105 days. They wanted to move it to 120 days. That would add 40 more flight hours to the biennium. That's $2,600 a day times 20 days times 2 years. Times 40 flight hours at $1,100 an hour. So essentially you're just paying that money, I think, whether the guy flies or not, you know. So it's just to keep him on call. So that's essentially what you get. You get 15 more days for $148,000, roughly $10,000 a day.
Further comments, questions? Any further discussion? All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt section number 60. Aye.
Aye.
Section 60 has been adopted. The next section for consideration is Section 63.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 63, Governor's Residence, Standard Budget, no changes. Call for the question.
Question having been called. Section, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 63, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The next section, Section 63, has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 67.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's 66.
66, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Section 66, Wyoming Tourism Board. Yield to my colleague from Lincoln County.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tourism Board, one seasonal position was reduced under the Tourism Board. That was about $39,000. The same amount was left in place for another seasonal position. JC pulled back $1.8 million. For market expansion in the Pacific Northwest, but left in place $2.7 million. And then the committee moved $900,000 from the Film Incentive Program, moved it into a market promotion expansion, thus recouping that money. So they now got $3.6 million for market expansion and promotion and so forth. $620,000 was directed to the College Rodeo Program. Late Senator Wallace putting that together in the committee, and that essentially breaks up with $120,000 for a contract administrator of the Team Wyoming program, $160,000 for college rodeo team sponsorships, $120,000 for incentive payments for individual rodeo athletes, and $30,000 for sponsorship of the High School National Finals Rodeo, $30,000 for the College National Finals Rodeo again, and $160,000 to support regional rodeos at the colleges and the university. That's a call for the question.
Mr. Majority Floor.
Chairman, meaning no disrespect to the sponsor of the amendment, but did this committee consider the baseball team that Senator Ross and Senator Peterson lost? And what about that bobsled team while we're at it?
Any further discussion?
Call for the question.
All in favor? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, so my question is, well, other than the obsession the committee seems to have with rodeo, I'm trying to figure out, does this mean the end of the film incentive program, or is there still money in there? Or this seems like a fairly large policy decision that the committee took upon itself. And I'm just wondering what the thinking was behind that.
Yes. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we asked agency if they had any funds in that account, they indicated they have right now $1.2 million. It was thought that they had enough to see him through the biennium.
Yeah, it's rodeo movies.
Question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 66, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 66 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 67.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 67, University of Wyoming. Call my colleague from Goshen County.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you all got passed out, and it's in your top shelf right now, something from the University of Wyoming having to do with the footnotes. So I'll speak off the budget, and the footnotes have some other explanations there. And I certainly don't intend to read all of the footnotes, so I'll try to read through this. If you got a question on the footnotes, more likely or not, it's answered on the handout. If you have some need for discussion, we'll certainly take the time. First of all, Mr. Chairman, the total for UW this year is $402,861,746. Let's look and see what the JEC did on the footnotes. One, Mr. Chairman, we required a report from UW of the fiscal, legal, and policy implications granting reduced tuition in neighboring states and high school graduates. And essentially what this is, Mr. Chairman, is to look at our surrounding states and trying to see whether or not, rather than having the full weight of out-of-state tuition, we could give those states a break. Some states do that. Some of them have like a 150-mile radius, something like that, from the border of their connecting state, and it seems to work out well for them. So we wanted to check that one out. The other thing that we directed UW trustees to conduct a study of the implications of residence hall improvements, including costs. A lot of that has to do with making sure that we have all of the improvements staged at the right time. We don't necessarily want to go in and fix a lot of pavement and stuff next to the residency halls and then go in and fix the residency halls and then tear up the pavement and do the infrastructure. So we wanted to make sure that all those dominoes were in a row and fell at the right time. So, Mr. Chairman, the next one is that we move $5 million in general funds into the arena auditorium to capital construction. And you'll see that on page 107 of the budget. Mr. Chairman, then the governor's letter number 16 recommended that we put $655,900 for the second year funding of the BLS-3 lab operations. Folks, there was a problem with the BSL-3 lab, if you haven't heard about it. Essentially, when they went in to pressurize that lab, because you're dealing with some pathogens that aren't supposed to get out anywhere, there are some seals that were put in wrong. They had a power outage. Some of the electronics didn't work right. The pressures got on the wrong side, and it actually sucked in some of the walls and ceilings. So there's a big mess out there. This is probably only the camel's nose under the tent with this $655,000. So just to make you aware of that. We added $100,000 for rodeo student recruitment. We also added $100,000 to reduce the amounts charged to students attending athletic camps. That goes at UW. That's the same type of amendment that we had for the community colleges. For the same reason, $2 million for general fund for purposes of providing a state match for athletic recruitment, training, and equipment. And you'll note on that one there that it's not to be used for salaries, coaches, buyouts, or CapCon. So we put some restrictions on that. Then, Mr. Chairman, let me get down in here again to footnote 8, $2,500,000 for enrollment incentives. Then footnote 9 was $8 million into the block grant to establish a new Tier 1 academic program, the College of Engineering. In your handouts, you will see some discussion about what a Tier 1 college is and what the goals are. It's also in footnote number 10. It specifies a level 3 architectural design that's supposed to be reviewed and approved by the governor and is directing for funding the construction of the new engineering facility. Footnote number 11 is actually footnote number 9. Is 11 on your page, number 9 in your bill. That directed transfer of $5 million from the block grant and the university endowment for scholarship matching funds. Footnote number 12 on your sheet was $5 million in a separate line item for UW endowments for a petroleum engineering chair. $7.5 million to the UW appropriation endowments for creating Academic Facilities Challenge Fund, and that's specifically for the High Bay Research Facility. $5 million in number 10 to be used for endowment matching purposes that you're a petroleum engineer. 11 was authorizing up to $7.5 million for an academics facilities challenge fund for the High Bay facility. Mr. Chairman, I think that's got the footnotes. If you want any discussion, I'd say first read the handout. That should give you the flavor of the discussion we had. But I'd stand for any questions. And if there are no questions, which it doesn't look like it, so thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand for questions.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, basically three questions. One, we have a constitutional obligation to keep the university as nearly free as possible. I'd like to know how we're doing on that score. I know there was some material passed out when we were debating the Hathaway scholarship issues that was showing a fair increase in university tuition and particularly fees, and you really got to add those together to see the picture of what's hitting the students. How does this budget handle that set of issues? What was the discussion in JAC on that? Second, you know, we used to see in the old days their self-funded portion of the budget in the federal funds. I guess current practice is not to do that. So how much is the total university budget and how much of that is the state support here? And the third question, Mr. Chairman, is a much more prosaic one. We've had in the past a general, you described some matching fund provisions in for specific fundraising purposes, but in the past we've had for general fundraising purposes, we've had a matching program. Is that still around? Is it funded in this budget? I wasn't clear on that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Vice President.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I'll answer on the tuition. And we did some comparatives that was provided to me by the university, and we'd look at other land-grant colleges. We did 24 of them. And I'll give you some of the ones we did: California, University of California, University of Minnesota, Texas A&M, Kansas, Arkansas, South Dakota, North Dakota States, University of Idaho. Anyway, out of those 24, Wyoming is the 24th in terms of what we charge. 2011-12 for resident undergraduates was $4,100. 2012-13 was $4,200. Mr. Chairman, for the non-residents, just a second. For the non-residents, Mr. Chairman, we did the same 24 universities, and South Dakota State University is last at $8,600 for non-residents in 11 and $9,300 for non-residents in 12-13. University of Wyoming is next, $12,855 for 2011-12 and $13,500 for 12 and 13. So the point, Mr. Chairman, is that we're very competitive. In terms of all these other land-grant colleges, I understand it, have a similar requirement, nearly free as possible. We're certainly doing better than them.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you all know what I do in my day job. And this is in, I guess these two questions or clarification requests are based on that. But on the previous couple of budgets, we set aside $35,000 to the community colleges for recruitment of rodeo athletes. I think that's great. For the University of Wyoming, we set aside $100,000 for the recruitment of rodeo student athletes. Now, I wasn't informed, nor was I asked any questions about this, even though that's my day job. But I would tell you, and might remind the body, that in rodeo, it's all the same league. There's no difference. Our community colleges compete against the University of Wyoming. So, and as the good senator said, we normally beat them. But maybe that's why we're going to have to put a six-figure amount in place to help them recruit some better rodeo athletes. I think that divides out, by the way. I'm not a math major, but I think what we're doing for each college is about $5,000. And for the university, we're doing $100,000. And then I go down a couple, and it says we're going to put $2 million in place, state matching funds, for athletic recruitment and athletic training equipment, et cetera. I think I've been as supportive as just about anyone for our university. I mean, I'm a cowboy from way back, but I just find that to be a little lopsided with our thinking. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I want to even up the teeter-totter a little bit on the lopsidedness there. It's $35,000 to each community college, not $35,000 for all of them. So that kind of evens it up. And it's just not for recruitment, Mr. Chairman. It's for things like coaching and other things associated with the sport. So those are the reasons for that. Speaking a little bit to the good senator from the tall senator from Natrona, as far as what we're doing to help make sure that it's easy enough to go to Wyoming. But the budget footnote 9 actually has $5 million for matching purposes for scholarships. So that allows a fairly good endowment amount to go in just for scholarships to help defray those costs and those people that have the qualifications for the scholarship. So that helps, too, in keeping the price down.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a little bit of curiosity regarding footnote 6, which has to do with the enrollment growth at the university. And as a member of the Joint Education Committee and as someone with the university in my district, I'm a little curious where we came up with the idea that we want to increase enrollment at the university by 400 people each year for the next 2 years and put a substantial penalty/incentive program in association with that. Largely, it's just curiosity. I have no idea where this came from. I don't recall any discussion in Joint Education Committee about us needing to increase the enrollment. I'm not even saying we don't. It's just straight-up curiosity of where this idea came from and how was it vetted.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's been a lot of discussion about, you know, with the university and ways to improve it and different things and a lot of different incentives we've done. You know, we talk about salary increases. We talk about all the money we're spending on capital construction. One of the things we never talked about is the number of students. We started looking at it, and we went back to way back when I graduated and the number of students, and we looked at other colleges and compared where they were in the late 60s, early 70s, and even 80s and 90s. And most of the colleges have really seen some substantial growth. And yet the University of Wyoming just languishes there. And so what we thought about, and we looked at the amount of capital in terms of the physical plant size, we asked some questions, and with the feedback we got is that certainly the physical plant could handle more students. And then the other question is, well, can the teachers handle and the professors handle more students? And that was a question that I, you know, it's a matter of whether you have 30 college students in a class or 40. So we thought, you know, we looked at some schools and we looked at North Dakota State University that's grown from like 12,000 to 18,000 students in the last 8 or 10 years. And we said, why not the University of Wyoming? So we thought the way to do it is provide an incentive. That's the private sector. That's how I think we have a new president that, quite frankly, I'm excited about, who comes from the private sector. And We threw a kind of a bone out there to say, here's some incentive. Let's see what we can do. Let's increase the enrollment. That was the discussion we had.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And I'll base this question on the number five, but I think it goes to some others also. What they're talking about is $2 million for matching funds for the athletic booster organizations. The funds actually come out of the university state aid. But the way this amendment is structured, the state treasurer shall match each cash or cash equivalent. But the money isn't actually in the state treasurer's office. It used to be when we did these kind of things, we appropriated the money to the state treasurer, and the state treasurer transferred it to the university. And this is the state portion of the match. The way this amendment reads, it comes out of the state, of the university's budget in the university's grant. The state treasurer never sees this money. I think structurally this amendment and a couple others are backwards because the state treasurer won't have this money. The university's got this money. And maybe that's what they wanted to do. If so, it contravenes the endowment program that's in statute now because it's structured in a way that doesn't match up with the endowment program, as do a couple other of these where it mentions money coming from the state treasurer. The money won't be in the state treasurer's office under the wording of these amendments. It sure does. It says state treasurer down on line 17, and I'll quote, to the extent funds are available from this appropriation, state treasurer won't have that appropriation. That's in the university's block grant. It's where it's at. The university will have it. But it's structurally there, and there's a number of them in here, and they all have the similar flaw. But maybe we want to flaw the program. I don't know. Maybe that's...
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to renew my question that wasn't answered earlier. What is the total budget of the university when you look at all the things it has, you know, federal funds, endowment funds, other earnings, tuition, and whatnot? And how does our state, and I'll add, how does our state's state aid compare as a percentage with other states? I suspect that comparison is pretty favorable for us, but I really would like to know that much of the basics of the finances here. Is what is the total budget that we've got? Second, following on the other comments, it looks to me like there's been a change in the matching funds fundraising strategy here. And I really think we need to have some discussion about that, especially if we're taking to just ignoring the statutes. I'm starting to see that as a pattern here, where we're ignoring statutes and just changing things in the budget without the normal discussion that you get with a change of statutes. And I wonder, Mr. Chairman, if we aren't setting some very dangerous precedents, and I really wonder if there may be very good reason to change the fundraising and matching fund strategy at the university. It has been a very successful program for both the university and the community colleges, and I think we need some more discussion of that.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of quick questions on the budget. When we get to the footnote on number six, the question is where it says defer these charges for attending athletic. Does that include students from outside or kids from outside the state of Wyoming coming to these camps that we're now paying part of their cost also? That's one question. On footnote number eight, where we've added the $2.5 million for enrollment incentives, I'm still confused as to why we're now doing a budget footnote. Can't the university do that out of their block grant, or do we really need to start providing additional monies to provide incentives when it sure seems to me like it would be in their best interest to do that as part of their normal operating procedures? And then also on the footnote under 11, I have some pretty serious concerns that we spent a lot of time earlier in this session talking about this endowment challenge count and how that worked, and now we're just doing a direct appropriation for $5 million out of there to provide scholarships. And after the interim committee spending a lot of time working on this summer, this never came up. So I share my concerns with the tall senator from Natrona County that this is something that probably should be discussed a little bit more. But those three items, two questions and one concern.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll take the total cost of the university first. For the general funds portion, it's $380 million of biennium. Federal funds, 20. Other funds, 136. So that's $535 million under Section 1 of their operating budget. Under Section 2 of their operating budget, which includes federal funds, primarily research grants, university funds, and federal mineral royalties, it adds up to $492. You add those two together, it's $1,027 million to run the University of Wyoming for a two-year cycle. To get to the question on footnote number 11, if I understand the question, it's general fund money, but it's from the block grant that they have. So it's not new money. It's money that they already have within their block grant, and we're suggesting to them that they shall provide matching scholarship funds out of that. So it's not new money that's going into it. We suggested and said in a footnote that you shall use $5 million for additional scholarships, the thinking being we needed more scholarships. And I'm trying to remember your other two questions. And my colleague from Goshen County is mysteriously absent.
Mr. Chairman, the first question comes back to the footnote number 7, or excuse me, footnote number 8 is the $2.5 million out of general funds for enrollment incentives. And my question was, is why shouldn't that just be taken out of the existing block grant? I would think it was in the university's best interest to retain those students and then look at that enrollment. So I still don't understand why we're putting additional general fund money in there. Should be general operating procedure.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Vice President,
and I think that's a fair assessment, but we haven't seen any growth. In the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, you look at the university and it's pretty much flat. And in the private sector that I live in, incentive is created by money and money drives things, and so that's why we did it, to see if in fact it would work. And if you take, I can't remember the exact language in the footnote, but I think it's between 500 and 1,000 students, you look at what that provides in terms of additional students, if that makes a difference, you look at the tuition and other things you get, it's a net-net win for the university.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions. My first one is curiosity on 11 for the endowment challenge account. Can this money be used in addition to the Hathaway scholarship? I had thought that university scholarship money couldn't be used to add to the Hathaway. The second one I have is 12 and 14. You moved $5 million to a separate line item for the engineering chair. 14, you added $5 million. Is this going to make up $10 million to fund the chair of the petroleum engineering?
Mr. Chairman,
President.
I'll answer the first question on number 11, that this doesn't in any way, shape, or form have anything to do with the Hathaway Scholarship. Those still operate independently. They're granted. They're in place. And the university does a lot of different scholarships. This would be another one that they would possibly use, and it's up to them to figure out what they want to do with it. As to you look at 12 and 14 and 13 and 15, those numbers, that's just separating and having a category to change it around so it flows and it's done properly for the way we set up our budget. So there's no, it's not a doubling. It's still the same amount. We're not doubling. It's $5 million for the endowment chair for the petroleum engineering, and it's $7.5 million for the what we call the high bay center at the engineering college.
Other questions? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. I just want, before we wrap this up, a couple of questions of the JAC. You know, we've talked about a lot of the individual items. We'll get a chance to look at that. But there are a couple planning pieces looking out that I would like to ask you whether you discussed it.
during the engineering renovation, the Tier 1 effort, you know, frankly, for those of us that participated in that effort, it was a surprise to me to see how far we had fallen on our engineering facilities. And there are a couple other areas that really need focus on as we look forward to the future. One is just the general science labs on campus. If you had occasion last summer just to go through and look at the science labs. So this would be your microbiology, your physics. These are all of your other labs. This is different than the STEM facilities for undergraduates. And I think if you look at it, you'll see that for most of the grants that we bring in from the state of Wyoming are, in fact, the largest amount come from the biological sciences, the microbiology labs, things like that. So and if you look at other institutions, one of the areas where we're lagging is in our percentage of research. So it's a pretty big area. Question one is whether or not the JAC inquired about that or heard any testimony on that. Part of the, that's one. Two is King Street is behind the dormitories, and we talked in the past about taking a look at that. It may have been that got wrapped up in the dormitory process, but I'd like to know what the testimony was with respect to King Street. And the third area that you talk about is there was some discussion about putting some money in on the engineering Tier 1 effort to bring in some of the mathematics department into the engineering. I'm not sure if that's a good or a good idea or not. I just wonder if it was discussed. So the three things are the math facilities, whether or not there was discussion about whether or not we ought to be looking at that with respect to the Tier 1 engineering. Two is do we have are we beginning to look at the laboratory facilities for sciences on campus, what it brings into us, and whether we ought to be making a capitalization effort there. And the third area was King Street.
Senator Meyer.
I'll speak directly to King Street. That was the pavement that we were talking about that might get torn up if we didn't do that right, because there's some facilities underneath King Street as far as some of the infrastructure underneath it, like water mains or sewer mains, electrical or whatever it's underneath there. That probably should have some fairly immediate action on it. If we do that now, we're just going to be doing it again because we don't have all of the designs and things that we're going to have to do on the dormitories. So, King Street was specifically talked about. I don't recall the topics on the other ones. Maybe some of the other committee recalls about the math or the labs specifically. We spent a great deal of time at the BLS-3 lab over in Laramie, but not a lot of time, I believe, on the labs and some of the other facilities. So I can't help you with that, but we'll... We can actually get back with UW and get an answer for that. If they didn't bring it up, we can certainly get an answer for you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee all rise and report with respect to...
We got a vote. We got a vote. Question.
Oh, we didn't close it.
Oh. Question having been called. All those in favor of Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 67, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 67 has been adopted. The next section
will
be tomorrow.
I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report with respect to Senate File 1. And we're not done yet, folks. We're going to do some general file this evening.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Yeah, I think you got to go up. You got to read it in and then go back.
Now we're going to be done with this, and then I'll work on that.
Hey, you got a question?
Yes. Let me get my...
come back in a while.
You need to pee.
Okay. The reading clerk will read today's action on Committee of the Whole. Mr. President, with respect to the budget bill, Senate File 1, the Committee of the Whole took action as follows. The following sections were all adopted. Section 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 14, 15, 20, 21, 23, 24, 27, 29, 32, 37, 39, 40, 41, 42, 44, 45, 48, 49, 51, 53, 55, 57, 60, 63, 66, and 67. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move for adoption of today's action taken on the budget bill.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion's carried. In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1B, further Committee of the Whole action will be continued until the next legislative day. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I move that we resolve ourselves into Committee of the Whole to consider files on general file, bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say nope. Motion's carried.
Anybody say
Mayor
no?
Mayor Christensen.
Huh? Give
staff.
Staff and everybody come back quickly, please.
All right. Senate will stand at ease to the sand of the gavel.
Thank you.
consideration is Senate File. The Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 4. The reading clerk will read the Senate File.
Senate File 4, sponsored by the Education Committee, School Finance, Local Resources, and Act Relating to School Finance. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, O2, Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Cole?
Mr. Chairman, move the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so as do pass recommendation on Senate File 4 and defer to that senator from that town over on the other side of the hill with the well-financed rodeo team.
Senator Rothfuss.
Yeah. I bring Senate File 4, which is again, a Joint Education Interim Committee piece of legislation to correct statutory difficulty where we end up accounting for dual and concurrent enrollment fees in such a way that it discourages local districts from accounting for those fees based on agreements between local school districts and continuing education facilities in their district. It's a relatively short piece of legislation. You can see on Chapter 2 that all we're doing is adding to a list of exclusions for computation of local resources in line 17 through 19, any revenues received by a district from post-secondary education option programs provided under Wyoming statute. Those programs are dual concurrent enrollment and distance education. And the scenario that this bill accounts for, this legislation accounts for, is a situation where, for example, you have a BOCES mill levy for a district. That BOCES is paying for dual and concurrent enrollment. But when the funds are received, they're received through the BOCES and then paid to the school district to compensate, per the BOCES agreement, for those classes taught in the concurrent and dual enrollment. That, under current statute, would have to be counted as a local resource. It would offset the block grant. So even though you have the BOCES mill levy, you can't account for it correctly without double counting it. This closes that loophole. That's all it does, Mr. Chairman. We heard good testimony in Joint Education Committee that this was a good little bit of legislation to close the loophole. And perhaps most importantly, it eliminates one of the many reports as an effect that school districts will have to file with the Wyoming Department of Education, eliminating their dual and concurrent enrollment local resource report. So a big win there. I encourage favorable consideration and be happy to answer any questions.
Good question. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 4. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 4 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5.
Senate File 5, sponsored by the Education Committee, Teachers National Certification Pay Incentive, an act relating to teachers. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, O2, Barnard, Cole, Landon, Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 5 and defer to Senator Anderson, Senate District 2.
Senator Anderson.
I would ask you to look at on top of your desk for this handout, Senate File 5, Teachers National Certification Pay Incentive Talking Points. Perhaps it will save us a little time. I'll try to go through and hit some of the main points, but for the most part, I'll just call your attention to that sheet. Senate File 5 has to do with the clarification for the eligibility of National Board Certified Pay Incentive reimbursement. And really, I guess you could call it a bit of cleanup, but within the statute, if you'll go back on the second page of the bill, and lines 4 through 10 says, effective school year 2007 and each year thereafter, the teacher holding certification shall be employed by the district full-time as a teacher. And for the purpose of this subsection, then, it says, quote, teacher, unquote, shall include employees of the district certification and employed full-time as instructional facilitators, certified tutors, librarians, and counselors. And that's really what the bill attempts to do, is to define teachers to include those other that group of professionals. It's outlined pretty carefully, I think, in the handout I gave you. But I will just simply say the first bullet on the handout talks about providing reimbursement to school districts for that amount that is yearly incentive, the $4,000 paid to teachers. There's an explanation of the number of districts. And then near the middle of the handout, it says specifically job assignments such as, again, instructional facilitator, speech pathologist, librarian, certified tutor, or question of satisfying the language in the set forth in the statute. So that's really what it is to do, is to bring those people in compliance with that term, teacher. There was some questions in regard to whether or not this would include would create a big bubble. Would there be, you know, a lot of folks rushing in? I talked with one of the officials with the National Board Certification Group the other night at the dinner, and she said it would be negligible, the number of people coming in under this and this new definition. Also, on the back of the first sheet you have, there is all those National Board Certification subject areas. If these folks were to come into the fold of the National Board Certification, they're fully prepared to give them the courses that they would need in order to make them more viable persons in their positions as far as the National Board Certification. Then there is then a spreadsheet in regard to all the counties and how many board certified teachers, and that just additional information. Probably a lot more to talk about, Mr. Chairman, but for that, I would pause for questions, and if not, I'd call for the question.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look into national certification, board certification, which is certainly a great program, my recollection of the way the program is that once you become eligible for it, you get an increased payment of about $5,000, and it goes for as long as you remain certified. And so I was curious whether or not the committee, so it could be your entire career. So if you want to, I mean, that $5,000, I assume, goes into your retirement. It's a pretty significant thing. It's something more attractive for younger teachers than folks that are closer to retirement. And it's not necessarily tied to performance as much as it's tied to education. So we assume that the education gets the performance, but certainly I would believe that there are teachers out there that may be equally performing, but we don't recognize their merit. And unless they achieve this. So I think it's about a $5,000 a year, $4,000 a year bonus for the rest of your career as long as you maintain it. No relationship necessarily to performance. There's no testing aspect of it. Did the committee look at whether or not that's an appropriate way to reward somebody for so many years as opposed to, say, 4 or 5 years?
Thank you. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the sake of clarification, the good majority floor leader, it's actually a 10-year certification that applies to. Then you would have to recertify. This year, for example, 3 teachers were recertified. You have to go through the process again effectively and spend a few hundred hours that it takes over the course of the year to get that certification and work through it. You could technically fail again. The process is not a guarantee. It's a process that some teachers go through for several years before they're actually certified. It's considered to be very rigorous, and the hard data I have not seen available. It's probably out there. I'd look for it, actually, and try and get that to you. But anecdotally, it seems to be a pretty incredible system in terms of improving the classroom performance of teachers, because that's what it's focused on. It's not simply going to classrooms and, and hearing lectures. It is spending a tremendous amount of time over the course of at least 1 year analyzing and reviewing your classroom performance and receiving feedback and criticism from instructional experts on your specific performance and how to improve it. And then once again, you can fail. And then you have to come back and do it all again the next year, and that happens. There's a lot of workshops and a lot of time invested. A lot of people wait until, for example, after their kids are out of the house to even invest the time because they can't do it and have a family and teach. So it's an awful lot of effort. But, again, it's a 10-year certification, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, based on the discussion that was just presented, I'm guessing, do we know what the pass-fail rate is on these certifications? I think that would be the litmus test is to determine, is it a 90% pass rate, 100% pass rate? I guess I share my senator from Albany County's concerns, the senior senator there. These certifications don't mean that you're going to be a better teacher. This is the quickest way to increase the cost to your schools and the block program by getting these certifications. You can be certified and have a master's degree and PhD, and that does not mean that you are a good teacher. It's fundamentally different things. You can have credentials, and you can be a good teacher. And I guess I'd like the answer to the pass-fail question on this. Do we know what those statistics are, the people that apply for this? But I have a real concern. This is just an expansion of the teacher salary, and it doesn't reward performance in the classroom. What we want to do is provide incentive for those teachers that are good teachers that perform, not teachers that just add another credential so they can get an increase in pay. And I think the whole thing needs to be revisited, but I got a real concern that this is just an expansion in pay grade is all this does.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I think all valid questions, good questions. In regard to the pass-fail rate, I don't have that at hand. I don't know if the other committee members do. There may be one over here. We'll hear from that. But let me say to you just anecdotally, I have talked to quite a few of these national board certified teachers, many of who already have had a master's, and they say this program, National Board Certification, is considerably more difficult, more rigorous than getting a master's degree. They also say that it is by exponentially a lot more valuable to them because it really does relate to what they're doing. But with that, maybe some others can ask you your question in regard to the pass-fail.
Senator Barnard.
I'll get it for you.
Mr. Chairman, I can't be quoted for sure on this, but I think if I had to guess, I'd say the pass-fail rate is about 25% to 30%. Some school districts have a higher percentage because they kind of work together and they study together and they do better in Evanston. I would say it's anywhere from 20 to 30% pass rate. A lot of people take it two or three times before they get it.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up a little bit. When we entered into the partnership with the foundation, the L. Bogan Foundation, state-private partnership, the one thing that really stood out in it was that you just don't go back there and get a credential and then show up in the classroom and be a better teacher. What they really emphasize is proven ways, I can't think of the right word, but where they go in with teachers that, I mean, their program is based on proven ways to enhance instruction. Proven ways to enhance instruction. And that's really attractive side of it. I've got a number of teachers up in my district I've talked to that are National Board certified. They said, let me tell you what, this was unbelievable what I went through to get this. And I think there's 400 to some that are nationally board certified in the state today, but they really learn proven techniques of instruction. That's the thing that I think is the most beneficial about it.
Senator Rossis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the only data that I have available as far as the pass rate is 70% pass eventually is what I have. So of the teachers that begin the process, 70% end up passing it. But as the good senator from the western part of the state indicated, the pass rate for a year, an individual year, is much lower than that, because this is assuming 2 or 3 years on certain occasions that get you to that point. Just following on to my good colleague from up in Park County's comments, over the time on the Joint Education Committee, this is, in my view, the most effective program in terms of delineating teachers that are going to be successful at teaching children and not. And we don't have in Wyoming a specific correlation, to the best of my knowledge, between test scores and performance. It unfortunately is anecdotal, to the best of my knowledge. Now I'll look into that and probably get some follow-up from the folks who are experts on it. But from testimony, from people who've been involved in this, and knowing teachers that have been involved in this program and having long conversations with them about what they did, this is a very high-quality program and does get us performance in what we're looking for in education. I wish we had several other tools like this one in our toolbox available to us, and I think any of them would be worth it.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 5, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 5 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 64.
Senate File 64, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Public Health Nursing, an act relating to public health. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Perkins. No, Senators Meyer, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 64 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I yield to Senator Kraft for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill that comes to you from the Joint Labor Health Social Services Committee, and it addresses an issue that's been a really thorny one for us for a number of years, the issue of public health nursing. It's been a challenge primarily because some of the public health nurses in our state are employed by the state, some are employed by the county, some counties have a mix. And the funding, the supervision, the operations of these nurses has been a huge issue. The county commissioners actually addressed this issue. They worked very, very hard in the interim, and the result of their really good work, in my opinion, is Senate File 64. What it does is it has a short-term option, a very, very short term. It will begin July 1st, 2014, and end June 30th, 2016, where the county commissioners of each county have options. They have options of the ability to enter into memorandums of understanding with the state. So the county and the state, as in the Department of Health, can decide. Does the county want to allow the state to employ all of the public health nurses within that county? That's the way it is in most counties right now. That option could continue uninterrupted. Or would the county prefer to operate themselves under a block grant where they would receive monies from the Department of Health and do it themselves? Or do they want to choose a portion of that? There's choices for them. There's choices for them to consider, so there's a lot of flexible options, but this all goes away in 2016 with the idea that in that time, that gives us a chance with those short-term solutions, it gives us a chance to look at a longer-term solution. So it gives the county commissioners the charge of organizing a task force that will work on this issue for the long-term solution, provide recommendations back to the Joint Labor Health Social Services Committee. So there are the three options. There can be hybrid options. There can be a variety of choices, that all of this driven by the individual counties through their county commissioners. There's been a lot of good work on this bill from the county commission. We heard great testimony in the Labor Health Social Services Committee. And if there are no questions, I would call for the question on this bill. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Yes, I'm curious as to how much this is going to cost, whether the counties that are wanting to do this can afford it themselves, whether or not what level of service is already available in these counties, and just how big will this nursing program grow under the different scenarios that you put forth.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your question. Actually, nothing will grow. Right now, it's a 65-35 split county-state contribution. The choice is, do I want to, as a county, administer the public health nursing program myself? I'm the county. Do I administer it? If so, then I get a block grant from the Department of Health to do so. It's the same amount of money. If I choose for the state to administer it, which is the huge majority of the counties in the state, they choose to have state administration. Our thought is they will probably continue to choose to have state administration because so many of them are so small they really can't do it themselves. Where we have the problem is when we have a county, my county, for example, where you had both state nurses and county employed nurses working under different salary schedules, working under different forms of supervision, working even under different schedules and different hours. So the idea is to give the counties the choice. Do they want the state to administer it? Do they want to administer it themselves through a block grant from the state? Do they want to continue that hybrid? But that's the choice with the existing monies. It's not going to grow the program. There will be no more monies put into the program.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and let me be explicit. There is an appropriation in here that the Appropriations Committee did not choose to change. And frankly, the appropriation was a wild guess. When the two counties withdrew from the current system, the budget was cut by $1.6 million. When I drew up the bill based on the county commissioner's recommendations, and their task force work is not complete, which is why it's a two-year bill, I thought, well, maybe we could restore $500,000 of that so that we had some money to contract with the counties coming back in without taking it away from what the other counties had always had and really damaging the effectiveness of the program. So there is that appropriation. You always have the chance of more appropriations in the future, particularly if they can run an effective program, which the current program has not been, in part because of the management problems that the County Commissioner's Task Force is getting solved that this bill does. So you do have the question that there may be back for more money in the future, but for now it's just what's in the bill, and there's not an additional appropriation beyond that contemplated at this point, but I'm not going to bring any amendments up. I don't know who might.
Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I hear on one side, and I'm really confused that it's not going to grow, yet we have another $500,000 in here. Then I hear that there's other counties out there that might participate, yet I hear it's not going to grow. Now, to me, being on appropriations, when we appropriate money from the state, that's growth.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, it's not even going back to where it was. So from that perspective, that's not growth. You do have two counties that departed that really, in order to run an effective public health program, we need to have come back in, and you need some money to do that. Otherwise, you've got a situation where you're discriminating against the counties, and that's not fair. You've got a situation where the public health program in part of the state is not as effective as it needs to be, and that's trouble because that will get reflected in all kinds of other costs. So you do have a partial restoration, and does that appropriation is right in the bill.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. There are two counties that opted out. There is funding for them if they choose to opt back in. There's $250,000 per year, so $500,000 for the biennium. $250,000 per year for two counties. So if you add that up, that's $125,000 per year per county if they choose to get back in. The appropriation for these counties when they left was $1.6 million. So we have gone from $1.6 million down to $500,000 for the biennium. That's all that's in there. Thank you.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of the questions that the good senator from Goshen County was talking about there, there's three counties that don't participate at all. One county up in Campbell never has participated in the program. The other two counties, it was kind of an administrative nightmare. Natrona and Sweetwater counties had different administration, different commissioners, and the Department of Health had a different regime, and they couldn't get together on a compromise, and it was an administrative nightmare for Sweetwater and Natrona counties. So several years ago, they opted out. That took the state control away from those counties. And with that, I think the counties had been picking up, trying to maintain the level of services, but have found out that it's nearly impossible to do that on their own. With a change in leadership in the counties and with a change of leadership in the department, they've been able to work out a new system that says we're going to do an MOU where we're going to provide you the same level of funding that we did years ago. And you'll be able to do the 65-35 split. And you have to agree with the state of Wyoming to sign this on the condition that, you know, you sign the paperwork that says you're going to provide the services in the way the state of Wyoming needs you to do that. And that's the biggest portion of this, is it gets the counties back under the state control, has that same split that they had in the past, but then contracted counties are then able to contract employees or contract nurses, and, you know, it's not actually state employees. It's all county. It's under the county. They're providing them the funding with an agreement on the MOU. Now, if other counties choose to go this route, then we actually will reduce the number of state employees because all they would do is provide funding to those other counties for the same level of services that they have now. So they won't actually, it wouldn't actually cost any more. It would just, so, you know, it would just offset the way they are working it right now. They would provide the funds within an MOU agreement, not have additional employees, have actually less state employees, but then they all become contract county employees. So in reality, what the Department of Health told us was that we need to, for them to provide the same level of services in Natrona and Sweetwater County that they had before, it would cost $1.6 million. That's what they had in the budget. That's what they reduced their budget by,
several years ago when the two counties opted out.
Thank you. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I need some clarification here, because when I go to the back page and I read this, as we keep talking about counties, but it says there's only three counties that are eligible for this program. And then what you've told me on this is Campbell's never participated. Sweetwater and Natrona have opted out. So there's really no program right now as it exists today. And as I read through the assumption is if we put these monies in there, then the counties are going to somehow come back. So my question is if Sweetwater and Natrona have opted out, they're picking up that cost for these public nurses already by themselves. Campbell has never participated, so there's no program under this program right now. We're putting money back into it, trying to entice the counties now back into the program. I just want to clarify that's what this is actually doing, but that's the way it reads in the back.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, you've got to understand there's a statewide program. Statewide program is there. It's funded in the budget. And for those people, this change, we're trying to use the MOU process to straighten out a bunch of the administrative problems that have been chronic in this program and kept it from being nearly as effective as it should be. And so that's perhaps the main part of the bill. And then for the counties that have opted out, if they will come back, we're going to contract for specific services, which may well be an option we'll make available in 2 years when the County Commissioner's Task Force finishes its work. May well be an option we'll make available to everybody, because it may be, in many circumstances, a more efficient way to organize. So here, the appropriation really relates only to the two counties, and instead of the $1.6 million that they used to have, they're going to get $500,000.
Question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 64, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 64 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority. Mr. Majority, floor leader. You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye. No. Opposed? No. Motion passes. Mr. President.
Thank you.
The reading clerk. Oh, wait. Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 4, do pass. Senate File 5, do pass. Senate File 64, do pass. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, I move that Committee of the Whole rise and report?
No,
wrong.
Adopt the Committee of the Whole report.
I move for adoption of Committee of the Whole report.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Messages from, or reports from Standing Committee.
February the 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 40, Involuntary Hospitalization and Treatment, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 17th, 2014, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 96, Workforce Service Independent Contractors. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, Senate File 82, which was read in earlier today, having an appropriation according to Rule 4-8, I ask that it be referred to Appropriation Committee Number 2.
Without objection, Senate File 82 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Crenn, I move that we stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Are there any...
Wait a minute. I said 9 a.m. I meant 10 a.m.
Okay.
Because we have some committees out there, don't we? 10 a.m.
Okay.
The revenue chair about freaked here, so we'll do 10 a.m.
Announcements. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5 will meet Tuesday night upon adjournment. And the Ag, Water, and Resource Committee. We'll take up Senate File 110, Water Change of Use. Senate File 115, Warrantless Search Repeal.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet in 5 minutes in room S11 to discuss the following Senate files. Senate File 100, Business Ready Community Program Modifications. And if time allows, Senate File 30, compensation for persons exonerated based on DNA evidence. And, Mr. President, your Rules Committee number 12 will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, February 18th, at noon recess in room S14 to consider the following Senate files, Senate File 106, State Education Administration, and Senate File 11, Appropriation for the Legislature.
Further announcements, Senator Van Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Barring a mutiny by the group, your number 8 committee, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet in about 10 minutes. Room S14 to discuss Senate File 86, Obstructing Roads and Highways, Senate File 101, License Plate Vehicle Indicator.
Further announcements, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, 30 minutes afternoon recess in room S16. To take on Senate File 93, Agricultural Gas Tax Refund. We'll finish that up and then talk about Senate File 87, Public Records Preservation.
Is that a dog barking?
Yeah.
And further announcements? You all heard the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate stand to recess until 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 18th.